Anderson.
Hello and welcome to the Geeks Codex podcast. Can you believe we've made it to seven episodes where we just keep talking about things and no one's listening. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Aiden.
As usual, I am your ever-present host, Matthew Briggs. I am joined, as per usual, by our rowdy group, our editor extraordinaire, Paul Stevens.
Hello there.
Super not rowdy.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
The rowdiest.
And our ever-effervescent, James Kirk.
I'm extremely rowdy.
Makes up for the rowdiness in all of us. I am tired of this podcast, and I'm currently wrapped in a unicorn blanket, so...
He's very happy.
I'm starting low energy, but since we're having a giant robot podcast, I'm sure we'll get rowdy and happy about this in the not-too-distant future.
For the second week in a row, we are bringing you all of the premium robot content.
And as anyone that's ever listened to anything I've ever produced in my entire life, you'll know that I'm a big, big fan of the giant fighting robots.
You're a big, big fan of big, big robots.
I am.
If you like big robots, you cannot lie.
One day I'm just going to be a big robot.
Sorry. You have to say that again. That was too funny.
No, keep that in. I want everyone to know that I did that.
So with giant robots in mind and us getting to them, but just put on the back burner for a while because we've got some non-robot-y things to talk about first. James, you did things recently, didn't you?
I have the nichest thing that you'll ever have on this podcast. I went to see the stage adaptation of the Twilight Zone that's currently running in the West End. I say currently, by the time this comes out, I'm pretty sure it will have come to an end.
Or did it happen?
Oh,
Paul, insert music here.
Yeah, hum the music, everybody. But no,
The spooky door.
It was really, really good. So something that I have not had the chance to talk about on this podcast before, but have wanted to, is that one of the things that I'm a huge nerd about is theatre. One day I will find an excuse to fucking nerd out about Shakespeare. I'll find the version that has giant robots in it or something. I don't know.
I would love to see a giant robot.
I would love to.
Anything Shakespeare.
But one of the things that I find really interesting is seeing adaptations of genre fiction
to
on...
To beam or not to beam.
I'm going to throw you out the
that
window.
That is the question.
Anyway... I really like seeing adaptations of genre fiction on stage, just because historically that isn't something that's been done a lot, because it's kind of like, how do you do it? I mean, we've had a few things like that in kind of like theatre over the past sort of like 5 or 6 years. In terms of horror adaptations, there's been, I don't know if either of you have heard of the film The Berberian Soundstage, which is like a horror film that's been adapted by the Donmar Warehouse. And we've had a stage adaptation of the 60s Twilight Zone series, like a direct adaptation of various short bits from the Twilight Zone that are all put into like an interlocking non-linear stage play. And it was great because they really leaned into like the original aesthetic, because the Twilight Zone was obviously like a teleplay, like it was done like theater before they worked out they could use more than one camera at once on television, like, you know, single fixed cameras and things like that. So seeing it on stage worked really well, but like they really leaned into like 60s science fiction television effects. Like there were people who were dressed to match the background in like hazmat suits that were painted to match the background, walking around with like, you know, there's the spinning cymbals in the intro. They had bits of cardboard that had them printed on and they would like wave them around. And it was just tongue-in-cheek enough to work. And like they used sleight of hand. Like one of the running threads that they used to tie all of them together is that people who didn't smoke, because it was a 60s TV show, kept like spontaneously generating cigarettes and not knowing where the fuck they came from. So it started off with people just having a cigarette in their pocket, and then it got to the point where people were like had like 10 cigarettes in their hand that had come from up their sleeves. And it was really interesting because like I said, one of the reasons you don't see like a lot of science fiction on stage is that people have never really worked out how to do it. Like, it's a very big technical challenge. And their answer was pretty much, just don't try and make it look like modern sci-fi. Try and make it look like 60s sci-fi. Because most of that was just them moving stuff around on string anyway.
And it's only a minor tangent, but I'm still absolutely shocked and appalled that no one has managed to do a version of the HMS Pinafore but Star Trek. I mean, they've done it the other way around. Yeah. They're putting it in Star Trek, so why not turn it into Star Trek?
That's a fair point. That is a fair point.
You get working with producers on that, Briggy.
Producers? You can find me at Briggy1701 on Twitter. Okay. I know a guy.
Good.
Okay, you'll need to know many.
But, I'm an influencer now.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah, no, Briggy has turned into an influencer. He has like 10 succulents and a bunch of smelly candles, and that's just his life now.
I'm becoming Jenna Marbles.
That's his goal. We all need goals. Whether they're achievable is not the point. Mm-hmm. But no, it was just really interesting to go and see something that was like 100% full on, like sci-fi on a major. Like, this isn't like, I always want to try and find a way to say this that doesn't sound really snobby. There's such a thing as kind of idea of like Disney on Ice theater that's like the live experience of this major property that's not like drama. It's on a stage, but it's more of a variety show thing. Like, no, this was produced by the Almeida Theater. They're like a serious theatre. They do like Shakespeare and shit. And it was just really interesting to see a production that was like 100%, 100% just like balls to the wall, fucking like, yes, we are doing sci-fi on a stage that will mostly be watched by pensioners who don't know what the fuck we're on about. And we will just do this. This is going to be part of our season. So that was my incredibly niche thing that I saw. And it was really interesting. And I was really glad to see somebody nail doing sci-fi on stage.
Do you know, or do you have references to any of the particular bits of episodes that they referenced?
Oh, yes. So one of the ones that they did is the one where they have the bus that's in the snowstorm, mm-hmm. and then they all go into the cafe and they realize that, like, I think it was 6 people were on the bus, but then there's 7 there. That's the one that it opened with. They have the one with the guy who can't go to sleep because he has the heart condition, mm-hmm. and they have a musical number where the woman who he sees in his dreams just fucking blew the audience away and does a proper showgirl number in like a black and white sparkly dress. All of the costuming was done so that it wasn't quite black and white, but it was very muted. And that was fucking phenomenal. They have the one where their kid is in like its cot and then goes to the other dimension, and then the dad follows through and the dog's there. Mm. And they have, and I can't remember if I've ever actually seen this one on the TV show, but the one where they think that the nuclear bomb is going off and everybody starts fighting to try and get into their next door neighbor's bomb shelter.
Yeah.
And that one was really good. And there's other little bits and pieces. They have some that are referenced but not fully done. You know, the one with the woman who's like conventionally beautiful, but she's in a society where everybody
thinks it, yeah, they, it is younger.
There's like this interstitial stuff where we keep seeing her. And then the end, Rod Serling is there, like as a character who does not realize he's a character in the Twilight Zone. It's great.
Nice.
What about the one with on the wing of the plane?
No, they don't have that one. I was disappointed.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, it's probably quite hard to do as a stage production.
Yeah, you say I also like the Simpsons version of it where it's on the side of the bus.
You say that, they managed to do some fucking impressive shit.
Yeah.
And then some of it was cardboard and it was great.
I mean, in terms of, like, for the particular type period in time, now that they are doing the new series, it does seem like it's an apt time to be looking at the classic ones as well.
I think also, I mean, again, this is not really in nerddom per se, it's very much like a theatre thing, but like there's currently a huge trend in like West End theatre and drama to do the equivalent, I guess, in television terms of like a anthology series. Like I recently saw some of the Harold Pinter series that was put on at the Pinter Theatre, which is a bunch of short plays all played at once. So I think we see that in both like television with the Twilight Zone revival and Black Mirror and things like that. And we see it on theatre. I think people are kind of coming back around to the anthology format, which I fully approve of. I really like anthology stuff. I mean, we had the Philip K. Dick one with, was that Amazon?
Oh, that was Channel 4.
That was Channel 4.
Channel 4, yeah.
Electric Dreams?
Yeah. Janelle Monáe was in it. I approved. But no, it's, I think that's something that we're seeing a lot of in media in general. And I really, I mean, even Love, Death and Robots.
Can I get a giant robot anthology?
Go write one.
I mean, I could, but
there you go. We'll put on a stage play. But you'll have to do it all in perspective. So you'll have to basically be really close to the audience.
You get enough of the budget together, you can do a hell of a lot of shit. There was,
I could just be a cardboard Gundam.
There was a adaptation of Astro Boy that had like gigantic puppet robots at the Barbican fairly recently. That was more of a dance piece. It was more in a kind of operatic style without operatic singing. But they did, like, I saw the pictures. It was incredible looking. It was a Japanese production that used, like, puppetry to have proper giant robots. And it was really cool.
That's how you should do giant robots, is with massive puppets.
Gundam rock opera with practical effects.
Do you get working on that?
Well, I'll go wait for them to finish building the Gundam first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you got to do it outdoor.
Yeah. Well, by all means, you go for that. Everyone else will just be in theatres where it's warm.
Hey,
I'm not saying I'm going to do it in England.
Outside theatre is a thing in the summer.
I mean, yeah, theoretically, you could do it. You could do it at the Globe, and then no one would be able to move.
To beam or not to beam.
There you go.
We did it. We solved his stupid joke.
But we didn't come to a consensus whether or not we beam.
That's the point of
the soliloquy is about the I will take you to see Hamlet
or the window, whichever it's like riled up most. It's just one or the other.
I know what I'm saying.
We know what you know.
Tell you what,
doesn't make it better.
I will put on an adaptation of Hamlet that is set in fucking Gundam universe, just so that Briggy will come see Hamlet with me.
Have they not already got one of those? Surely it seems like something that Gundam would have done.
I will absolutely say that Hamlet has been done in every single fucking way. So probably I have a Czech, I think it's Czech, rock opera adaptation that is professionally filmed on stage of Hamlet.
Have you played the Choose Your Own Adventure version?
Is that the one by Ryan North?
Yeah.
I love that one. There's one of Romeo and Juliet as well.
Oh, turn to page four to be.
Oh, it's
turn
it's
to page
wild.
Six not to be.
There's a really great thread in that one where like you play as Ophelia and then you become like a mad scientist and you basically invent central heating. And that's the plot of Hamlet in this version.
What indie game have I stumbled into?
It's a good one.
It's really good. You can get, shout out. So there is a paperback version by Ryan North and Noel Stevenson that you can get. Oh, it is on Steam for like £5 and it's really fun.
You can get it on Android. The Steam version is better because it's got voiceover because the Android version is just reading the text.
There's also Romeo and or Juliet, where you choose which one you want to play as, and it's a choose your own adventure book.
Nice. Anyway, where were we? Oh, yes, Twilight Zone. So I'm guessing it's a recommendation.
I mean, like I said, it's one of those things where I'm kind of sad because it's the thing about theatre is you can't necessarily be like, go see it because it's going off stage soon. But if they ever do a revival of it or if there's a tour or anything like that, because it was successful.
Why can't they just Blu-ray it?
Because there's a lot of issues with regards to genuinely paying actors for the right to take a live performance and distribute it. It's genuinely quite expensive and theatres don't make a lot of money.
Yeah. Anyone's got a YouTube recording, hook us up.
The rich theatres, like the Royal Shakespeare Company, that don't have to pay the writers of the plays, do. Mm. Like, you can buy DVDs of the Royal Shakespeare Company doing Shakespeare, because it's not under fucking copyright. And the actors are usually, like, company actors who signed specific agreements. But if it goes on tour, if it ends up going to, like, the US or anything, and anybody's listening and gets a chance to see it, like, yeah, definitely watch it. And I think if you get an opportunity to see sci-fi on stage, like, don't think, oh, that must be shit, like, give it a go. It's interesting.
Cool.
And that was my incredibly niche thing. So well done if you listened to all of that.
Well, as I say, I mean, in terms of Twilight Zone, I'm sure it's going to be that thing where it's like super popular now that Mr. Peele's turned up and gone, oh, Mr. look Peele. At me, Mr. Peele.
Oh, he deserves respect.
I'm not on first name terms with John Peele.
I wish that I could be.
The opposite, when I was talking about Kevin Smith, I just call him Kev.
I admire and respect Mr. Peele too much.
Yeah. But in terms of like that popularization of the otherworldly sort of sci-fi sort of anthology, it's really exciting. Cause...
Yeah, I'm so excited to see the new Twilight Zone. I know some people have had mixed reactions to the new one, but a lot of that seems to be, oh, they didn't film it in black and white and make it all like self-referential to 60s kitsch. And I'm like, if I wanted that, I could just go rewatch The Twilight Zone.
Yeah. Or that second reboot of The Twilight Zone that
nobody wants to watch that one. Now, I've heard a lot of people literally saying, I didn't like it. It should have been in black and white. And I'm like, you know, it wasn't in black and white because like Rod Serling really wanted it to be in black and white. Like, it's in black and white because TV was in black and white at the time.
You know what you could do? You could just go onto your screen and just turn down the color.
Contrast off.
Yeah. Mm. Well, not contrast up because it's a dark screen.
Yeah. That's true. Nah, settings.
Settings. There you go.
Yeah. You figure out your TV. I'm not your mother.
Hear that, listener? You figure it out.
Yeah.
It's not his TV.
Watch it in black and white or don't. I don't care.
Yeah. But no, I think by the time we do the next podcast, I will have watched whatever's out. I'm going to be interested to talk about it. I am a big fan of The Twilight Zone.
So Twilight Zone, good, right?
Twilight Zone, very good. I approve.
Yeah.
Love the zones of Twilight.
Yeah. So yeah. I wonder if there's anything else that we need to talk about, Briggy.
Shazam!
David Batson, I choose you as a champion. Say my name so my powers will become yours. Shazam.
So Briggy's a lucky bastard who got to see Shazam early before release.
Which by the time this episode goes out, I'm guessing everyone that wants to see it will have had a chance to see it.
You say that. I don't have a lot of money at the moment, unless I can steal your Limitless card.
I mean, it comes out like the day after we record this.
Yeah, no, I don't have the money to get a cinema ticket.
Yeah. Well, we'll figure something out. Anyway, Shazam. If Wonder Woman was a good movie and Aquaman was a step in the right direction, Shazam is proof that the DC connected movie universe can be good. And good lord, I want more of this movie. I'm going to see it again, and I can't wait for a sequel, and Zachary Levi is fucking perfect as Captain Marvel. That's right. The real Captain Marvel.
Oh my god. So Briggy has this DC versus Marvel thing, and he gets really mad if you're like, well, they're both called Captain Marvel. He's like, no, only one of them counts.
Just saying, Fawcett Comics created Captain Marvel long before DC or Marvel had anything to do with the character named Captain Marvel, and that is this Captain Marvel.
Okay.
The school is called Fawcett High.
I was like, oh, is it? Oh, yeah. I love that.
Oh, it's chock full of little references to it. Captain Marvel, I mean, it is based, anyone that's familiar with Captain Marvel, or Shazam, as we now have to call him due to litigation, anyone that's familiar with his New 52 storylines, that's what this movie is, essentially. With the obvious exclusion of anything and everything to do with Black Adam from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because Black Adam was going to be in this movie. And then he was going to be in Suicide Squad 2. And now he's just in Black Adam, which is its own standalone movie. So
they were just like, fuck it, we know who you want to see. You want to see The Rock.
But now that I've seen Shazam, I am so very excited to see The Rock versus Zachary Levi.
I will say one thing. The Rock as Black Adam is just stupendous casting, right?
It's also typecast.
But in like a good way.
Okay, so Black Adam's origin story
is
effectively the exact same as the Scorpion King.
Yeah.
If you replace scorpion parts with lightning.
The Trapped in a tomb with lightning.
You know what?
Sort of.
Close.
Kandak's a weird place, man. It's a weird place.
It really is. But also, the reason that The Rock
not
is...
Not kidding.
The reason that The Rock is typecast as those is because A, he's good at them, and B, he enjoys them. He has fun doing those kinds of roles.
It's weird, because when you mentioned the Scorpion King, I was like, it's weird, because The Rock doesn't really play villains. And I was like, but he did play villains. And he does.
He was a heel.
Yeah, let's not forget, he didn't become popular until he'd had that heel turn.
Yeah,
no one liked him as Rocky.
When he first started doing acting, he was still kind of in his heel phase.
In fact, he's one of the only wrestlers who have ever gone so heel that he came back around to face without an actual turn.
He just like, did like too much.
He's like, yep, you know what? I'm cool.
He was basically the original like anti-hero in the sense that he was a villain, but also you loved him.
So anyway, Shazam, the movie itself based on the New 52 run. The main villain of this is Mark Strong playing Professor Sylvana.
Oh, is it Mark Strong?
Or Dr. Sylvana.
I actually didn't remember that.
Who's also a big part of that New 52 storyline, but he's great.
Mark Strong.
Because you forget from the trailers that there is a villain to this movie, because so much of it is like fun between Billy Batson and Freddy.
Well, the trailers were...
learning for him to be a superhero. Because those trailers pretty much give you the first two acts, mostly, in terms of like the ideas that are thrown around is him... It's with great magical powers comes great magical responsibility. and it's cool for that. But then you don't get to see any of the third act in any of the trailers. They don't give any of that away.
The thing is, that's how trailers are supposed to be. Like, they give you an idea of the feel of the film, but they don't tell you what happens in the film. Because if you want to know what happens in the film, you go see the film.
That's not how it worked in a lot of DC trailers.
No. Including Wonder Woman.
It's really good. There's several major like geek moments happen in that third act that are cool if you follow the comic books and you know, you're wondering what they're going to do with Shazam outside of just have him appear. There's some really good jokes in there. One of my favorite jokes in the entire movie I've not been able to tell anyone about yet because it comes in the third act. And it's so fucking funny to me. Because it's very self-aware as to what it is and to what superhero movies are. And it's very self-aware to what DC has been doing with superhero movies recently. So it's amazing for a lot of that.
Who directed Shazam?
I feel bad because I can't remember now.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I haven't heard a lot about the director. So I'm wondering if it's anybody who's like a recognizable name or if it's somebody who's like... just this is their first big movie. I'm going to look it up. Hang on.
And part of me as a DC fan got a huge amount of enjoyment out of this movie for having a big screen adaptation of a comic book property where we get to throw a lot of silly names around in serious, like, earnestness.
Mm.
Like, okay, like, we had Atlantis and stuff, and we had Themyscira. Like, okay, these are places and locations that...
Themyscira, you know, is just Greek.
Yeah, but, like, this is part of the DC canon, but nothing felt that special to me in those previous watchings of those films as hearing someone mention The Rock of Eternity and Kandak. I'm like, these are places with silly names that we never thought would be on a big screen, and they're, we're very serious about the history of Shazam here.
So I just looked up who the director is, and I was correct. He is somebody where this is, like, very much his first, like, blockbuster movie. Do you want to know what his previous...
Go for it.
So he is best known... His name's David Sandberg. He is best known...
Sandberg, yeah, that's it.
He is best known for his collective no-budget horror short films under the online pseudonym Pony Smasher. And he did a film called Lights Out that didn't make a lot of money. And
oh, that's the one where monsters come when you turn the lights
yeah.
off.
Yeah, and he did did Annabelle Creation in 2017.
Oh, he's the one who...
he's a horror director.
Yeah, but that's the thing is he did the... Because Red Letter Media did a bit about how he basically got made by Warner Brothers to do a horrible competition that was horrible. but, like, in terms of, they'd seen his short stuff, and he was like, he's a promising director, yeah. and he's done this stuff.
Yeah, he was like an online, no-budget, do-your-own-thing.
Yeah, and then what they did was he went, you made two films, and even though they aren't, like, an Annabelle series just makes money because it's got that name.
Yeah.
But it's that thing where they go...
It's job work.
And they go, okay, well, we've got a new DC film coming up, and we don't know how these work anymore, so go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I like, though. I like to see DC being like, you know what, we gave it to this big-name fucking director, Snyder, and he fucked it up. What if we just grab some people who nobody's ever heard of, because nobody has any faith in our brand anyway, so it's not as though we can entice them back with big-name directors. Because the last time we tried that, we got fucking Batman versus Superman, which nobody wants to remember. And in doing so, they're also sort of saying they're allowing for more experimental takes on it, and they're allowing for new directors to make their name. Like, I like that. I don't need... The thing is, you can sell a DC film or a Marvel film whether or not you've heard of the director, because you can sell it on the brand. Even with the DC brand damaged as it is, there are enough people who care about comic books and superheroes. So it makes sense to me that you'd give it to people who might not otherwise get a big break, rather than giving it to directors who don't need any help.
I mean, I think in the realm of movies specifically, because I know I've already said this about Tokusatsu Gurga, but Endgame is going to have to be real, real fucking good to supplant this as my favorite movie this year.
Oh, there's so many movies coming this year, though.
I know, but this has been so fun. It's so earnest about, like, what it is as well.
Yeah.
It looks like it has sincerity, and I think that, like, superhero movies need some sincerity right now.
The Shazam-ally is great.
the Shazam-ally, yeah, I love that.
The foster kids, all the child actors they got are absolutely, they're precious. They're so good. The foster parents as well in this movie, it's great. I mean, I know I've read the comics and stuff, but for anyone that's not, like, familiar with it, it's so nice to see them, like, a Hollywood big action movie where the foster parents are, like, not assholes.
Yeah.
Where they're genuinely good people, and, like, yeah, they're good. They're technically heroes in their own right in this movie.
You know what this sounds creepily like?
What?
Sounds like a family-friendly fun film.
Yeah, it is.
Oh. No!
It's great.
You're telling me I could take, like, a 9-year-old and they might enjoy themselves?
I think Shazam merchandise is going to be super good this year.
I can imagine it. Because the thing is, Shazam as a character is, like, every kid's dream. Well, on the one hand, he's just like you, but on the other hand, he can do all the stuff that adults can do.
And let's face it, anyone that's listened to me talk for the last 10 to 15 years knows I've regularly used the term Shazam as one of my favorite exclamations.
One of these days it's actually gonna happen.
Lightning through the ceiling, like, Shazam, bang!
And the thing is, like, you can just imagine kids on the playground screaming, like, Shazam, and playing pretend, as opposed to something like fucking Batman versus Superman, where it's like, what kid is gonna quote that movie when
Martha
they're playing?
Martha is my mother too.
Oh my god,
did
you hear what Snyder said, where at one point he wanted it to be that Martha was the same person? I wish they'd done that. That is so batshit. It comes back around to just being like, I wish they'd just
this
done it.
This tells you the current state of, like, Batman in movies. Is that, as soon as I've done the Batman voice, the first thing I think of is not actually an official...
Dr. Fisher!
No! If anyone's not seeing the Batman sketches, you need to Google those, because they're amazing.
One of the nice things about Shazam being what sounds like a really good film, is with this and James Gunn doing the new Suicide Squad and all the rest of the stuff, like the new Wonder Woman, the 80s stuff, it's almost like they went, let's just make good films.
Oh, if
bring back Taika Waititi.
If you are listening to this podcast and this is your deciding factor as to whether or not to see Shazam, based off of what we've said, yes, it is a very nice family-friendly movie. It's very earnest about being a superhero movie. But don't mistake that for it not having, like, balls. Because they don't fuck about. Like, there's elements in there you can see, like, oh, it's a DCEU, so we've got to kind of be a little bit edgy.
Do they...
Kids like that, though. Kids like just a little bit of
that. Do they kill off literally half the cast?
No.
That's all right.
But Mark Strong's portrayal, looks like he's not messing around. He's brutal. That's kind of awesome, because like it gives you that sense of, like, yeah, towards the end. Like, when you wrap up that third act, it's like worth it. Like that.
Kids don't want to be terrified or depressed, but they do want to feel, like, a bit of a thrill. Like, I liked shit that scared me as a kid.
Well, yeah,
I'm not disagreeing with that. I was just saying, like, I just want to clarify for anyone listening.
It's maybe not for, like, three-year-olds.
It doesn't flow like a Disney movie might.
No.
It's very much still, like, you know, a Warner Brothers outing.
They haven't bought them yet.
But they have reeled in to a point that I think is now a sweet spot for where DC should be aiming for all their properties.
It sounds like the 80s.
Yeah.
In that you have, like, bad guys who are bad, and you should be scared of them, but at the same time, the good guys are cool and fun, and they do stuff which is fun, rather than serious.
As soon as you said that, I knew exactly what you meant. Yeah. It feels like we got that. It's a modern version of those 80s, like, action flicks and superhero flicks and things, like, you know, Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah.
But maybe a little more better written.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Burton's Batman does also kill people.
Yeah, I was more thinking of, like, Predator or something, where it's sort of like
OTT,
like, fun nonsense.
I was trying to think of, like, you know, something a kid might be able to actually see.
Terminator. Or even, like, Terminator something.
But the jokes are great as well. Like, the jokes are so well written, and I can't wait for everyone else to have seen it so I can discuss my favourite joke in there, because it's a corker.
Now, this is probably not...
It's not like a spoken joke, not like it's just a situation, a concept that happens in a lot of superhero movies that realistically doesn't work, and like, in terms of, like, it wouldn't work in reality just because of physics, and so they pastiche the fuck out of it. And I was like, Briggy,
it's not going to work if you can't actually explain the joke to us.
I know, anyone that watches a movie knows in the third act something happens that physics says... You couldn't get away with something no one's really ever thought too deeply about. And when it happens, you're like, huh, that's hilarious. And I was rolling, absolutely crying with laughter at this point in the movie. So when you get to that third act and it happens, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's not possible to know.
Answers on a postcard.
Yeah.
Or just tweet Briggy.
Tweet at me and I'll confirm.
DM him.
Yeah, DM me.
Slide into the DMs. You want to talk about some physics?
I'll give it another, like, 3 episodes of the podcast, like, 6 weeks, and then I'll mention it and be like, that's what I was talking about.
There you go. One of the things I was going to say, which it probably doesn't have, does it have, like, a theme song where, like, a specific, almost, like, made for this specific movie sort of song? Is there one where you'd go, oh, that's the song.
A superhero movie with a good soundtrack that isn't like Guardians of the Galaxy.
It doesn't really have a musical motif, but...
Oh, no, Wonder Woman had one. Yeah. Wonder Woman has the only song from a superhero movie that is part of the soundtrack that I can, like, think of. Like, you literally, like, tell me what the Avengers theme sounds like off the top of your head. You fucking can't. Tell me what the Captain America theme... I was pointing at Paul, not you.
Because that was the point, is that the Avengers is the only modern superhero movie so far, apart from Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman's riff is way more memorable.
No, it's not.
Only because way more people saw the Avengers. In terms of the actual song...
Musically, we have to set these discussions.
I was just off topic. No, because my reference was on the basis of when they did the Turtle rap in the Turtles movie.
Yes!
Okay, not that, I suppose. Not really.
Really, if they could do that in the sequel, if you could just put a rap...
There's no, like, Bots Master level white guy rap.
There's no poker rap.
But when I think of, like, musical motifs for superhero movies, like, you go back to, like, John Williams as Superman or Danny Elfman's Batman. Those, like, they're memorable even years later. Whereas I think Avengers has only just reached that point, because I was moaning about Avengers when it first came out. Like, there is no motif for this. It's something to hold. Now Avengers has
that. I will grant you that one song, actually. I will say that they have now achieved that. I still think that the Wonder Woman one is just instantly iconic.
They can play that Avengers theme in any style and immediately, like, yeah, that's how you know it works. Briggy.
The thing that I would say is the fact that we pick those two out as being exceptions in a time where films in general have really good soundtracks, like Captain America, Iron Man, tell me some fucking musical motifs that aren't, like, licensed. Like, yeah. You can't do it. And I think that is incredibly depressing.
Well, on a separate note, Iron Man screwed himself on that one because they built that entire musical motif around Black Sabbath.
This is the thing, though. Like, they didn't...
Which makes
in
sense.
In an era where we have some amazing film soundtracks and scores coming out and some really interesting work being done musically in film, especially the fact that the most famous films in the world barely have any recognisable... songs.
Yeah, especially considering that Disney owns some of these properties.
Yeah.
And they are famous for making really catchy, memorable songs.
And also, yeah. I mean, they have enough money that they could hire fucking anybody. Look. They could get fucking Williams in, you know, they could get Zimmer in even. Like,
why anyone doesn't use John Williams for everything these days if they have the money for it is beyond me.
Well, it's just, it also, just like, if you wanted to get like a particular like famous musician and just go, hey, we need to write a song for this particular film.
Okay, but that is how, I mean, this was staged, not the film, but that is how we ended up having to put up with Imagine Dragons. Did you know about that?
No, what's up?
So, you know the Turn Out the Lights Spider-Man musical? Originally, Imagine Dragons was basically formed to write music for that before it was given to Bono. That's why the song is Radioactive.
There you go.
So we all have to put up with Imagine Dragons because of that fucking musical. So that can backfire.
I like Imagine Dragons. And I also definitely think of Radioactive more of a Godzilla song than a Spider-Man song.
Yeah, no, they were originally going to do the entire musical.
But at least, again, it's that thing where you can tie it to a property and you go, these are the things where you should be able to go, I want to be able to hum this in my head. I
mean, yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. Even things like Harry Potter has a memorable soundtrack. True. Like, yeah, exactly. It's iconic. What are you wasting your money on, big companies, where you can't just pay a person?
You know what it is. It's not that they're not hiring good composers. From what I've heard in terms of behind the scenes stuff, they're not giving them enough information ahead of time in terms of how it's edited. And the thing about scoring a movie is, it's very reliant on the editing. Like, one of the really weak things for most Marvel movies, in my opinion, from like a craft point of view, is that they are very blandly edited. Mm. They're quite blandly shot. They have really bland color grading. There are exceptions. Thor Ragnarok. But a lot of them are very generic looking. And that's on purpose. They do it that way really quick. The editing process for Marvel is really quick to the point where directors have complained about it.
Mm.
And also because they want it to be as unobtrusive as possible. They don't want you to notice that something was well edited. They just want it to blur together so that they all look the same.
Yeah.
Because even if you have a load of different directors, if the editing style is always as generic as possible, they all kind of look the same. That's really bad for people who want to do interesting compositions, because if you score to the editing, you end up with long stretches where there's not a lot of variation, which is why if you listen through to the actual soundtracks of, for example, the Avengers movies that aren't like the main themes and things, they don't go up and down a lot. There's not a lot of like building tension and then releasing in the music or like swelling of the music. It all just plateaus.
Mm.
So the reason for that is that if you look at the editing across the whole film, it plateaus. It doesn't go up and down. So a lot of it is just basically like, these are factory made films that are done according to a formula with comparatively little like creative freedom for the editors, like specifically the editors. And a lot of that just has a negative knock-on effect. So that's like the music nerd answer.
That makes sense.
Back to my original point, which is the non-music nerd answer.
You can just cut that.
In response to, does it have a song, is not on one viewing, but... as I was saying about the Avengers stuff, that now has a motif that I can hum, and I didn't pick up on that or like that in 2012 when it first came out. So maybe after my second sharing, or once they start using Shazam in more of the cross-universe stuff, it might. Because I don't remember any of the soundtrack being particularly bad, but I just don't think it's memorable on one viewing yet. But then again, I don't think that for me, the Elfman Batman was super memorable after a single viewing. And that's something that's more nostalgic from many, many viewings. Maybe even the same with Star Trek with John Williams.
That's
fair. But it's not a bad soundtrack.
Do you mean Star Wars?
Yeah, well, Star Trek 2 has quite a lot of good music. But it's not
That's true in the movies.
And the series.
I mean, but the movies have the orchestral.
And since we did a whole bunch of nerdy talk about music, yes, Phil, the colour palette on Shazam, beautiful. Very bright. Very bright.
All I want is brightly coloured superhero movies. This is why I love Thor Ragnarok and Spider-Verse so fucking much.
Don't worry
about
it. That was a joke for one person.
Listen, I am having a moment here. It. They have actual colours in the trailer. I'm very excited.
So you didn't mention that in the Doom trailer for some reason, though, Piggy?
Because I just don't care enough about Doom Annihilation. It doesn't even get color palette discussion. Yeah, that's how bad that is. Yeah, Doom, I've annihilated it.
Okay,
so Shazam, because we've spent a lot of time talking about this, we'll move on, but I will give it my official review score recommendation of 6 out of 6 mythical concepts. Can you name them all?
No, I was just going to say, when you get to the sequel, you do have time to write the Shazam rap people who make music.
Yes.
We'd be totally on board.
I mean, he does floss in the movie, which is cool.
No, yeah. You know what you should do, guys, who are definitely listening to our podcast? You should definitely do some kind of fucking like Super Friends style theme.
Oh, yeah.
If there was ever a character that deserved that.
There's so much I want to say.
They should totally... Okay.
Are there any Super Friends jokes?
No, you gotta watch it. I've been very good at not spoiling anything. I think you guys need to appreciate and experience this firsthand.
If there's a Shazam rep and you're just holding it back...
How happy would you be?
Very. There's not enough bad rapping in
There's so many of that sort of moment throughout the entire movie. I think you're going to adore this film.
Cool.
I think it's going to speak to your inner child.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and yeah. I'm definitely going to go see it.
Speaking of inner children.
But, yeah, I was saying, can anyone actually name the 6 mythical gods and concepts that make up Shazam?
It is one of them.
Electricity.
It's the wisdom of Solomon.
Yeah, I know that one.
The might of Hercules. The courage of Achilles.
Oh, yeah.
The power of Zeus.
That's so generic. Like, that's such a cop-out. Like, oh, just the power of Zeus. Like, he's just powerful. Like, he's really good at passing laws.
Turning into, ducks and, raping people.
No, swans.
I can't remember what the other A is now.
That's definitely not family friendly. Zeus is such an asshole. Oh, my God.
I forget the other A. Someone can tweet me about it. And the M is the speed of Mercury.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well, kids...
I'm just Shazam.
Kids, do not fucking emulate Zeus. He's a complete asshole. He's the worst.
However, if you can emulate Zeus, by all means go for it, because who's going to stop you?
Yeah. Always be yourself unless you can be Zeus.
In which case, I guess just turn into a swan and become a creep.
Yeah. Always be yourself unless you can be a swan.
That is not acceptable.
Oh, my God.
Unacceptable.
Given what the swan does, I think you should really avoid being the swan. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Hashtag no swan.
Anyway.
Yes.
So, Shazam. Shazam good. Good Shazam. Watching it again. I've already got tickets for another viewing because it's that good. So, with that in mind, let's move on to something less fleshy and more heavy metal.
Just this childish, though.
More giant and more robot-y, I think.
Let's move on to the bit where I made everybody read, a ton of Transformers comics.
Oh, Transformers, yeah, that'd be... Yeah, okay. I thought we were talking about Gundam.
Here's where I put in...
Sorry, I thought we were talking about robotics.
Robotics. Oh, my God, okay. Here's where I was going to put in the Transformers thing, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to put in robotics.
To survive a cosmic storm that devastates their planet, the Protectons and Terracores are forced to transfer their essences into the huge, powerful bodies of robotics.
And here's the Transformers. Sorry.
So, Humble Bundle did a great bundle to celebrate the relaunch that we talked about in our last episode of
Paul tweeted the link. If you didn't buy them, sucks to be you.
Briggy, can you please let me finish? I am trying to tell the people about the Humble Bundle. So, it had nearly every comic in the original pre-reboot IDW continuity. There were a few, one-offs missing, but the vast majority of it is there. And it was $15 for 480 issues. So I made everybody buy it.
Yeah. If to side note, James liked to tweet if some dude who provides an actual proper list.
Yes. So there is also somebody who has put together an actual color-coded spreadsheet, which is exactly how I approach reading things, where it was you can read this or you can read this and you can start here. And I basically directed them towards it. And
I like to start from one. Problem is, there's a lot of ones.
Yeah.
I think someone at IDW forgot what numbers are and how they work.
There's three major phases is the thing of the original IDW continuity, and they're not hard reboots, but they're changes in tone and creative direction and storylines. So you can kind of start at the quote-unquote number one for any of them.
Mm.
But the thing is, because they're all fairly different in tone, you kind of have to work out what somebody is going to like. But on the other hand, if you don't start at the very beginning, you kind of have to keep the wiki open, because Paul in particular is not familiar with Transformers lore like me and Briggy are.
You know what the beginning is? It's not number one. As a DC fan, I am appalled, because I thought I knew what confusing comics and release schedules were.
Oh,
and apparently IDW, they're just smoking crack constantly.
There's
wow. Have we done a one recently? Nah, okay, one it is.
They rename series a lot, and there's a lot of miniseries as well. They didn't have that many separate ongoings, but they had a lot of miniseries, and some of them connect to each other. So it's like, well, do you like the Wreckers? Because there's like four Wreckers miniseries, and then there's just random one-off ones that are the spotlight ones, but then sometimes they're connected to like series.
And the spotlight ones are not in the Humble Bundle.
A bunch of them are missing. Yeah, I think there's two in the Humble Bundle. Most of them aren't that good, so it doesn't matter. But
the spreadsheet says that they were imperative and they must be read. And then they link gives Comixology to spend money.
My advice is don't fucking read Spotlight RC, because it gets retconned because it was so bad.
I mean, what I would say from the list is, if you are magically able to travel back in time because it's too late, if you had thought about purchasing this, the value for money is insane.
It's literally 480 issues, I think somebody worked out, for $15.
Yeah, and whilst I will probably not read them in any particular order apart from the one that we started reading for this, I will continue that, and I will probably go back to the list and then work back from there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that it was definitely worth getting the higher tier, because it's too late now, but it was definitely worth getting the higher tier, because you do get, like, if you like, we'll get into this in the main discussion, but if you like different types of story, it has so much.
That's the thing, because it covers all of those three kind of like major tonal periods. It's like there's stuff that's like much lighter hearted, and then there's stuff that's like very grim dark, and there's sort of stuff that's like very tongue-in-cheek, and there's stuff that's very serious. There's like a lot of variety. So even if you're not going to like necessarily all of it, unless you're already a huge Transformers fan and especially a G1 fan, but like there's going to be something that you like in there. And for $15, they're like £8 per trade paperback. That's like six issues.
Yeah.
So it's like, as long as you like at least two trades.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, again, we're sorry this is like far too late for you people, but if you had been smart, it is really good value.
If you follow us on Twitter, you will have known before this podcast where to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things I would also say is apart from having to find the right, like, Android piece of software that I was happy with reading, is because that's a real fucking...
Oh, resource. I just use PDFs.
Yeah. Well, they have PDFs, but I'm like, I'll read from the comic book format.
No, just fucking read the PDFs.
It's too late now. I've downloaded them all.
I mean, I have a CBZ reader. And that's another thing. I like that Humble Bundle gave us a bunch of DRM-free fucking download formats.
Yes.
I mean, we're not sponsored or anything, but C-Display is the only thing.
Yeah, that's really what I use, yeah.
C-Display.
That's literally what I use, yeah.
Which one's that one?
It's not an Android one.
No,
it's
Windows.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I read them on the PC on a big screen.
It's just the open source. It's just...
Because with the size of my monitor, if I double page it on C-Display, it's like actually having a comic book.
It is really good for the double spreads, but yeah, no, it's like an open source. It just reads everything.
Yeah.
Now I can listen to some of the Vince Dickler soundtrack from the 1986 movie while I'm reading it.
Okay. Yeah,
which adds to
the effect. Why don't you watch it, read it on your Vive, and it's kind of massive.
Oh, I wonder if there's a VRC display.
Well, it probably is.
Okay, I'm going to look for that.
There you go. Then yeah, we have full-size Transformers.
Why isn't that a VR Transformers game? Anyway. Anyway. I've got weird feelings about all this IDW stuff, because I thought I knew it. But it turns out that I'm not a fan of either Ironhide or Ratchet having a head.
I don't know what that means.
God bless. So
the original toys for Ironhide and
the
Ratchet.
The very original toys.
Yeah, G1 toys. You know, the toys. You know,
the first G1 toys. They remade them.
Okay. Can I just stop you? I know Ratchet is the ambulance.
Yeah.
Ironhide is the red one that has a southern accent.
I don't remember that.
He has little horns.
Ironhide and Ratchet were the same toy, essentially. One was red and one was white. One was an ambulance, one was just a van.
For the record...
In the cartoons, they had heads, and they look similar to how they look in the IDW comics.
The original toys got like a fairly limited release and were basically immediately redesigned, because they were versions from Japan that were not... Like, they were not people robots. They were like... mecha suits, so they didn't have faces.
It was part of the Diaclone line.
So they stuck like stickers to the back of the seats where the pilots went, and we're just like, that's their head now.
They didn't even really do that, to be honest.
No, they stuck stickers on the back of the heads. Like, it's very funny.
It's definitely not in the original Marvel comics. The original Marvel comics, all the designs are based off of the toys as opposed to what was happening in the cartoon.
The very, very early US Marvel comics, not the UK later Marvel comics.
That's what I'm talking about, is the original comics.
Okay, there's being a G1er, and then there's being like only the original Ratchet toy counts.
Yeah, it does.
Wow.
What are you not getting about this, James?
Oh my god.
So, yeah, it was a bit weird seeing that. Also, like, I've read some of the mid-2000s stuff, which I think I gave you several issues of.
Dreamwave, yeah.
The Dreamwave stuff.
One day I will write a book about the absolute clusterfuck that was Dreamwave.
So, OG Marvel Comics and Dreamwave are my jam, and I thought this was Dreamwave. I just wasn't paying attention to you guys when you were talking about IDW, so when I got out, I'm like, this is not what I used to read.
They basically acquired...
Why does everything take place after the war?
To be fair, that's you're reading some of the later stuff. A lot of the original IDW stuff does not take place after the war. But the Dreamwave thing is interesting because Dreamwave is a company that completely fucking self-imploded, and that's how IDW got the license. They did acquire a bunch of scripts that Dreamwave had not been able to produce, which is where a lot of the stuff that relates to Megatron in the Megatron Origins stuff that they do comes from and so on. So there is like a connection, but Dreamwave was... Honestly, one day I will just do like a documentary about how badly Dreamwave... It got to the point where they attempted to charge the artists that drew their comics who weren't being paid for shipping the comics by back charging them after shipping them. It was like a huge financial scam thing.
Wow.
Yeah. It was wild.
It was terrible. But on the other hand, the Dreamwave comics have got easily the best Transformers art known to man, hands down.
Incorrect. Alex Milne is the best Transformers artist. He's in IDW.
I don't know who these people are. Can we get back to talking about
yes,
the comics?
Yes, sorry.
So, I'm going to say what I read, and then you could tell me what actually is happening, because I don't know. I read the... Oh, what is the first one on the list?
It's just called The Transformers.
Oh, no, it's the list.
Infiltration.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
I did not read.
Infiltration, essentially, for anyone who is coming to the list version of this, is like I would imagine Transformers in my head from my remembered cartoons movies, mm-hmm. where it felt like a Saturday morning thing.
It's a miniseries.
There were some bad guys, and they were bad. And the Ratchet guy who had like a hologram man.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing, yeah.
Yeah, that was like a bit like weird.
Yeah.
But he had a hologram man. And then they had the human characters. And the human characters were like a spunky girl who's like down on her luck, but she's doing her best. And,
what's her name again? I can't remember.
I have no idea. I literally read it like two days ago.
I'm trying to remember if it's one of the characters that recurs. It's not Verity, is it?
Yes. It's like, well,
Verity, yes. I love Verity. She's great. She's in a lot of the stuff with the Wreckers.
Yeah. She is all like pickpocketing and surviving on her wild stuff and all about the internet. And then there's Alien Believer guy who's like, oh, aliens exist.
Yes.
It's like, oh, look, they do. They're giant robots. It's like, oh, cool.
I wish that was me.
Yeah. And then there was the third dude who was just like a guy who worked on vans and he just happened to get tagged along.
There's always just like a mechanic. There's always somebody who's like, I know how engines work and I guess there's robots here.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, I've never seen anything like this before.
It's a Transformer.
Is he wearing a hard hat?
No, he's not.
Damn it. Is it one of the wikis?
He's a quite like cool young.
Does he have a stupid name like Sparkplug?
He has like a name. I remember Verity when you said it.
Verity is the one everyone remembers. She's great.
But the whole point of it is that Verity is swiped PDA. Or it's a proper PDA as well.
This was like 13 years ago. So this would have been in like 2006.
Yeah, it was. It was in 2006. And it was like, oh, look, it looks like an old school PDA where it's got like a green screen. And
yeah, like where it's like the Game Boy colors on the screen.
Yeah, and she swiped that and it's got some like top secret information. And she finds, or she gets picked up because she has this scam where she steals stuff. And then she gets picked up out of the coach that she's traveling on because she tries to get off. And then she hitchhikes with the alien dude. And then the alien dude and her get shot at because the Decepticons have gone rogue. Oh, gone rogue.
It's almost like they're called Decepticons or something. Insert John Cena here.
They literally call themselves Decepticons. That doesn't set off any red flags?
Enough! Cool.
The Decepticons have gone rogue.
Ah, because now we're going to get told off in a second. Megatron?
Yes, it's Megatron.
Megatron, the head of the bad ones.
Yes.
Or Buckethead.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
He is not doing this. It's Starscream.
Yes. Oh.
He is doing something bad with...
Suddenly it all makes sense.
Yes. It's always, for the record, it's always fucking Starscream. Starscream is my favourite.
So they're mining a special element that makes them super strong, but Megatron is not on board with this because he has, like, apparently there's an unwritten rule where you can't get humans involved or some stuff and they have to keep it secret, which seems, like, quite arbitrary for
robots
machines.
Robots in disguise!
Yeah, it seems quite arbitrary for murder
I think
machines.
It's because at some point in the IDW communities, humans were like, let's just fucking nuke them.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, maybe we should not get nuked.
Yeah, but, I mean, most of them seem like, from what they're doing, they could handle them quite handily. But anyway, so basically the humans go with the Ratchet guy and they then go explore an abandoned base, but Megatron's in there. And they didn't know that Megatron was in there. And everyone's like, oh, and then they have to get out and there's like everything's collapsing and there's two aeroplanes.
Listening to you describe this is delightful, yeah, by the way.
There's two aeroplanes whose names I don't know.
Thundercracker, like, and Skywarp?
Probably. The bad ones.
Are they blue and purple?
Yes.
Yeah. Thundercracker and Skywarp.
Yeah. They bomb the shit out of things. Like, really bomb everything. Which seems a bit OTT for what is essentially... Because, oh yeah, and that
like
point...
Like a medic and three fleshies.
Yeah. Oh, and at that point, Bumblebee is joined in.
Oh, well, like, if Bumblebee's there.
I know Bumblebee. I recognise him. This is important for in our conversation later.
This is important.
This Bumblebee is how I remember Bumblebee being just sort of like, oh, it's a guy.
Yeah.
And not like a really, like, psychologically important character in, like, a really big storyline. We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that, yeah. But yes. We skipped ahead. Just for anybody listening at home who is listening to this and being like, well, what did they read after this? I promptly told everybody to go read More Than Meets the Eye. So if you've read IDW continuity, you know that that's a big gap.
Yeah, so... Because you can do whichever you read Briggy after this, the little bit in between. Because that's literally in between.
I read 10 pages of for All Mankind.
I don't know how long this comic is, but it probably wasn't more than like 20. It was a really short comic.
Yeah. It was a miniseries. Infiltration was a miniseries.
I know, for All Mankind is like the same length as Volume 1 of More Than Meets the Eye.
There were a lot of miniseries that are like between 4 and 8 sort of issues. And then there were a couple of ongoings, but...
We'll get to that a bit later.
The two airplanes bomb the crap out of stuff and they escape just like with the skin of their teeth. And then Megatron goes to the other base where Starscream is, who's been getting roided up on this special element.
Just think of Joker at the end of Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, so he's getting all super like, I got all this power and I won't have to be a bitch anymore. And then...
Starscream is always a bitch, and that's why I love him.
And then Megatron comes down and beats the fucking shit out of him. Starscream's all like, I am now more powerful. You're not going to stop me. And then literally, Megatron blows a hole in him, like a massive fucking crater of a hole.
Oh, yes.
And it was like, wow. And then all the rest of the Autobots are standing around like, should we get involved? It's like, no, let's not get involved. And then at the very end, just to like be like an ending thing, it was like, oh, we better let Optimus Prime know. It's like, he's already here. And it's like, oh, cool. And that was the end.
Yeah. So that was followed on by, I think it was Devastation. There were a few miniseries that linked together.
Yeah, I will go back and read this because it is quite funny. But the thing I found, the way I managed to put into my context was... It felt like a little bit Michael Bay-ish in that you had like characters who were a little bit like spunky and relatable, but they were also slightly troubled. And it's a bit like here's how they can relate to giant robots. And then you also had the robots who like literally blew massive fucking holes in each other. And it was like, there was a lot of explosions and like...
See, those things, bits I'm interested in.
Yeah, a lot of explosions, like... Just like, let's blow something up again.
That miniseries and the miniseries that kind of connect to it are very much like you said, like, it's like a grown-up version of the Saturday morning cartoon thing where it's like, it's not like super psychologically involved or anything. It's just a fun serial that's like fairly short and there's some good action sequences and there's some very nice art.
Yeah, it looked like a fun comic where it's like, oh, I could pick this up and it's not too much thing.
And you can kind of just give it to somebody and be like, just read this. It's got robots in it and they explode.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's not enough Optimus Prime in it for me, to be honest.
Yeah, well.
But he has this thing where he doesn't like Transformers if it isn't like 90% Optimus Prime.
I mean, I'm guessing in the later ones he probably comes in.
I'd be cool with Megatron though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the comic itself, it felt like this sounds weird, it felt like a comic, like a, not like a kid's comic, because there's a lot of people getting blown up and some dude dies. But there, it felt like a comic, like an accessible comic. You could just give it to anyone and go, you know vaguely about Transformers, here's a comic, and you'll get the gist. And do you want to tell us?
So you.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And then, do you want to tell us about the 10 pages that you read of the F1, Briggy?
Yeah, so I picked up, assuming that's what you've gone on to, and only barely paying attention to the flow, spreadsheet. That's the way I'm looking. The words escape me now. Yeah, I don't tend to pay attention to many spreadsheets unless I'm the one that's made them. It's like with the Carmen Rider ones that I've got. So I just jumped up. I'm like, Transformers Volume 1, that sounds right. Right, that's Volume 1. It's called Transformers. It should be where it begins.
It's not chronologically, but like in terms of where the ongoings begin.
Oh, no, not chronologically, because it begins immediately following the war. Spike is somehow a major in some sort of task force.
Well, it starts in medias res. If you keep reading it, it explains how it got to that point.
I mean, I got 10 pages in. I was like, you know what? I'm fucking done with this.
Okay.
Like, I'm too tired for this shit right now. Let's close it down. They capture Prowl and take him away. And it's like, oh, we can't let the humans find out that we're here, but we need Energon. And it's like, I've just read more than meets the eye. I don't want any more of this after-war stuff. I want the war. So maybe I've got to go back to Dreamwave.
Okay.
No, there's loads of stuff that involves the war. It's just, there's a lot of stuff in IDW that starts in medias res. Like, if you want stuff that involves the war, go read All Hail Megatron is what I would recommend, which is like the soft reboot.
I mean, I'll be honest, the cover art to All Hail Megatron kind of got me like going, oh yeah.
Oh, I think you'll really like All Hail Megatron. It's not my favorite by any stretch of the imagination, but I think in terms of what you're interested in terms of what you're interested in for Transformers, it has a lot of Optimus Prime, it has a lot of Megatron, it has a lot of like action, it's very accessible. It resembles traditional G1 a lot more. I think All Hail Megatron would be a good fit for you.
I'm fairly certain that the 7 volumes or so of a comic that I'll probably enjoy in this called Transformers Optimus Prime.
Yes, you will like that. I feel like
the banner thing is just like, yeah, okay, I'm done. It's Optimus
they
Prime,
are set it. After the war, though. But it's interesting after the war.
I wanted to just pick up from season 4 of G1 and continue.
That's not what IDW does.
That's what Dreamwave did.
Anyway, so I reread 9 volumes of More Than Meet to the Eye in the time that everybody else read like a volume.
Yes, too many comics.
So obviously I've talked about it a lot on the show before. I am a really big fan of the later stage IDW stuff. I like all of the IDW stuff. I owned a lot of this stuff before I got it on the bundle. It was still worth me getting, but I owned a lot of it. And I eventually want to buy like the hardback collector's editions. It's like IDW is like my Transformers continuity. But I especially love More Than Meets the Eye. Just, I love it. It's one of the really late stage ones. Like some of the last issues of the IDW are in that continuity. So I know you both read like volume 1 of More Than Meets the Eye.
Yes.
So More Than Meets the Eye is one of the ones that's set after the war. It's basically where a bunch of B and C and Z list characters get together to go on like an incredibly stupid and completely ill-fated quest to go and find like some mythical group that will help them restore Cybertron, but they'll definitely never find it because they're all kind of losers. They all get together after the war and they all go on this ship and none of them get along and they all bicker all the time. And it's just, it's very fun space opera.
Yeah.
Like, it's classic character-driven. Like, it's much more character-driven than plot-driven.
Yeah.
Space opera with a bunch of characters that, in a lot of cases, have barely gotten a look in other continuities. Like, for any Transformers G1 fans out there, one of the major characters is Tailgate. Like, nobody fucking knew who Tailgate was before More Than Meets the Eye. I think he got, like, a bio and, like, 2 cameos.
Okay, which one's Tailgate again?
The blue and white mini-bot who's underground.
Oh, the one who's the old one.
Yeah, who was, asleep for 6 million years, yeah.
Yes, as a counterpoint to that is I owned Tailgate. I had the toy.
But, yeah. I mean, in the cartoon and in the actual continuity, like, he doesn't get a lot of look in.
I know, but I had the toy with his bio.
Yeah.
Yeah, which he wasn't asleep for 6 million years. He was part of the Autobot team. A lot of retconning going on in this IDW stuff.
Oh, you haven't gotten to like the later. For the record, that is like an actual plot point.
Oh no, I'm aware. It's just
yeah,
yeah.
It's not retconning, it's just a different continuity. It's like saying that Armada was retconning things because it isn't the same as G1, or like that Prime was retconning things because it wasn't the same as Beast Wars.
Well,
like,
first of all, Armada doesn't exist.
Shut up, I like Armada.
What? Okay. Which was that one again?
We're arguing about nerdy things, just calm down, Paul.
Sky One 2006?
No.
Yeah, around 2004 through 2005-ish.
Paul has a life, Briggy.
No, I remember...
It was the one that had the PS2 game, you know, before Transformers games were a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the PS2 game?
Yes.
That was Armada.
That was a good game.
Yeah, the game was okay, but the series itself was, I mean... It wasn't even as good as Robots in Disguise, which preceded it. Which...
Friends at home. You just have to understand that Briggy is an incorrigible G1er who just thinks that if things aren't G1, then they're bad.
I'm taking offense to this. G1er is not a discriminatory term. If anything, we're better than everybody else.
Oh my God, you see what I'm saying.
Okay, so back to the comics, because I have a lot of questions.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
So, first of all, as James has pointed out, I only read the first comic. The first collection of comics.
First trade paperback, is it?
Yeah,
really?
So that's the one. One thing I'll say, there's 10 volumes of More Than Meets the Eye, and then I think 3 or 4 volumes of Lost Light, which directly continues on. So it's like a 14-volume comic.
Cool. So I read the first volume, and there is a shed load of introducing people, like literally socio-economic sort of like shitstorm that's going on. But the way they do it initially is it's like, here's Optimus Prime. You know him because he's Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
Now he's fucking off.
One issue.
So I was explaining this to Briggy. Briggy got really mad. I think he thought that More Than Meets the Eye was the quote unquote main ongoing. So there's like, this is like the offshoot ongoing. Like there was an ongoing called Robots in Disguise that led into Till All Are One, which in turn, it also led into the Optimus Prime ongoing. Like the reason Optimus Prime isn't in this fucking one is because it's the spin-off one.
Yeah, but the thing, and Ricky's really not going to enjoy this, the thing I got most about the Optimus Prime in this is he came off, and this sounds like really harsh, but came off very DC, where he was like, this is not my fight, I don't care about this, I'm going to be more broody.
Right!
Fucked off. And I was like, exactly. That feels a little bit like a DC thing to do.
That gets followed up in the ongoing that he actually, like, because he basically, the thing about Optimus Prime after the war is that he basically gets really sick of everybody's shit and just fucks off to Earth. Like, not even in like a bad way, literally just in the sense of, you know what, I have better things to do. You're off politicking.
Yeah.
Not my prime.
But he has important things to do on Earth.
I remembered. I've watched another Transformers.
Which one?
I watched the new one, which is about prime. Rescue Bots.
Oh, no. That's like the kiddie one, right?
Yeah. That's really that cute. One.
We watched some of that, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cute. I love that show. It's really adorable.
Optimus Prime is in that.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing.
Hashtag not my prime.
Yeah.
That is not the Optimus Prime that I know as that character. That doesn't resonate with any version
of Optimus like I've ever enjoyed. In a different continuity.
A worse one.
No. Shut up.
He's in the ultimate bad timeline.
Optimus Prime is Robot Superman, which means he's either the best written character in his continuity that he's in, or he's mishandled horribly a la Man of Steel.
Hmm.
But also,
while there are, and I'm saying this up front, like, I'm not dissing More Than Meets the Eye because there are definitely enjoyable moments of it and enjoyable characters, but the biggest misstep of that entire first volume so far is its handling of Prime.
The thing is, if you read the, like, parallel ongoing comic that actually features Optimus Prime, like, he's actually doing important shit. Like, he's not just fucking off. They're just being a bit tongue-in-cheek to basically be like, yeah, so we didn't get the comic that had Optimus Prime in it.
I can get that. It's just the way it's handled. It's like having Kal-El going back to Krypton after Krypton like is alive or something, and just being like, you know what? I got no stake with helping any of these people. Let me just fuck off back to Earth for a while. Like, it seems very anti-Prime.
But it makes... This is one of the things where it's kind of like, you guys did skip ahead, like, a lot. It does make a lot more sense in context.
Oh, I mean, this is the other thing is I am nowhere away in any way, shape, or form, even on a scale as invested as Briggy is.
Oh, yeah.
I was just
And this is the other thing. Like, nobody reads More Than Meets the Eye because they really give a shit about, like, the A-list characters like Optimus Prime. Like,
you picked up on that vibe without any of the same, like, history I've got with the franchise.
He didn't care.
Yeah, that's essentially, yeah.
I mean, but you sensed it.
Oh, yeah.
You brought it up.
But that was the thing is it was sort of like, it was a little bit gratuitous. It was sort of like, here's a character,
it's,
you know.
It's a tongue-in-cheek joke. Yeah.
And then when it went into the other stuff, and it was sort of like, oh shit, I know what this is. This is Game of Thrones. this is a really fucking in-depth, you have to be paying fucking attention now.
One thing I will also say is what you probably don't realize necessarily is that a huge amount of all that stuff was introduced in More Than Meets the Eye. Like, this isn't something where a lot of this stuff, they'd gone into it in depth in previous comics. Like, a lot of the, like, politically sort of charged, like, world-building stuff, like, it comes from More Than Meets the Eye.
Yeah.
James Roberts really likes in-depth world-building.
Well, that was the thing, because I, as I say, I read that previous comic.
Yeah.
And Bumblebee turned up and was just Bumblebee. But in this, he's a fucking, like, game changer. He's all like...
He's an arsehole.
He's very tired. Leave my poor old tired son alone.
He's got a cane, but he doesn't need it.
I know, but he's just kind of an asshole in this book.
Well,
Bumblebee is kind of an asshole. Bumblebee is just tired.
But like, after issue one, this volume is great. I enjoyed the storyline put forward by it. I think you could. I just think the setup for it is garbage. Well, I think that first issue of setup just doesn't work.
Again, I think that it makes a lot more sense when you understand it came out at the exact same time as the first issue of Robots in Disguise, which gives a lot more context for the characters who are a lot more like, oh my god, stop. Like Bumblebee and Optimus Prime. Like, it makes a lot more sense if you're reading them, and they're kind of designed to be read concurrently. Basically, there were two ongoings, and you were supposed to read them both.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, as I say, just from the volume I read, yeah. I've got no problem with it.
I'm also just giving my impression of this based on Sight Unseen, self-contained volume one, yeah.
I will also say, Briggy, I think you will prefer Robots in Disguise and leading into like the Optimus Prime, yeah.
I mean, the only character that really feels like he should feel at all is Rodimus, and he's great.
Rodimus is amazing.
Okay. So Rodimus is...
It's Hot Rod. But then after he's had the Matrix.
Yeah, no, character-wise, Rodimus is... He's almost like a Star Trek captain.
Yes.
In the...
Just cast your mind back to that 1986 movie. Remember, in your head when you're reading him, you should be using that original voice actor, which was Judd Nelson.
Okay. I'm not doing that.
No. That's how I hear him in my head still.
No, he is absolutely just... Like, Rodimus is a terrible asshole and I love him dearly.
He just needs a cowboy hat.
I don't even think he's an asshole. He's just... Not. He's a...
He's Kirk.
He's one of those.
He's hot-blooded. Yeah. He is a shonen protagonist.
But it is that thing where he is like... I've got to do these things because I'm the captain.
Yeah.
But,
and he gives really good speeches and then like congratulates himself. I love him so much. Rodimus is my favorite. Rodimus in More Than Meets the Eye is my favorite Autobot.
That's on brand for him though. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, going back to the quite awkward Game of Thrones thing, he's a little bit Jamie Allen Lannister.
Quite funny.
He is like quite like in your face and everyone's got that like begrudging respect for him because he obviously is doing shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time...
And he's not dead yet.
Yeah. And at the same time, there's other people who are like, why are you doing this shit?
He's a captain. He goes on away missions when he shouldn't do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's just Kirk. He's just, like, hilarious Kirk.
But one of the things that I really liked in the...
Magnus is Spock.
The setup of this volume was all these surrounding characters. The one who is just the quirky asshole who is...
Swerve?
That's the one.
Yeah.
He's
like, I didn't know.
He's amazing. I love him.
Oh, Swerve is amazing. Yeah. I love him very dearly.
Him and the Drift?
Yeah, Drift, who is the one amnesia. Who's like the fucking, like, one who used to be a Decepticon who was like a drug addict and is now like a spiritual ninja Autobot. And everybody takes a piss out
of him.
Or
do you mean the one who's hanging out within the bar, which is Tailgate?
Tailgate.
The little white one with the blue eyes.
No.
Not Tailgate. No. Skids.
Skids. That's it.
Yeah. Skids. I love Skids.
Yeah. What happened? I've got questions about Skids. Clearly from...
They will be answered.
Yeah. But that's the thing is I like the fact that they've got this whole sort of like, let's get these dynamics set up throughout. And they've got the Doctor who's like neurotic.
Ratchet. Yeah. First Aid.
Yeah.
No, Red Alert. They all look kind of the same because they're red and white.
Rung. Like on a ladder.
Yes. Yeah, and he uses that. And then the bit with the bike, which you tweeted about, but the eyebrows, and that was great.
Yes.
But they're all proper characters who are just...
It's More Than Meets the Eye is... It has, like, a lot of strong plot stuff, and it has a lot of overarching plot threads. It was all the stuff in the first issue, which foreshadows, like, issue, like, 70. Like, James Roberts is notorious for being difficult to work with. He's the guy who wrote it. for artists because he writes like very long scripts because he plans everything out like 10 years in advance. There's a lot of stuff that is put in literally in the first issue that pays off in the last issue. But one of the things that really pays off very well is like he has a very strong focus on character, not just like individual characters, but their dynamics. Like it is not just character driven. It is like relationship and interpersonal relationships driven. And then that drives the sort of overarching plot. Like the whole cast ends up in like these very complicated, like interpersonal, but like not in a way that's like overly earnest. They're very, very like space opera is melodrama.
Yeah.
Like it's traditional melodrama. Everything has heightened stakes. It's not like sensitive, delicate drama. It's like, no, they're giant fucking robots in space looking for like mystical shit. Like it's ridiculous. And that's why I really love More Than Meets the Eye.
Some of the other things just from the volumes in terms of that melodrama with the social strata and stuff, the whole having the nails thing and having a proper anachronism for like what must have literally only just been something that's taking place, and it's like, here you go, here's a thing you've got to know about, but you don't really.
Oh, wait until you see some of the world building as it goes on. Like, holy fuck, they get very in depth.
Yeah, and it's brilliantly done to make it sort of like there's a bit where all the Decepticons are in like a jail, but then they create like cut a, like a proper like fascist sort of deal where it's like, if you help us with the crowd control, we'll let you out, but you have to have literally chips that will kill you.
Yeah, no, there's literally like this whole element, like, oh my god, just it's simultaneously really like political drama, but it's also like, because it's giant robots in space, it's very like self-consciously melodrama. Like it plays into both sides really well. Like it doesn't shy away from like psychological realism, but it also doesn't shy away from the fact that it's a fucking Transformers comic and inherently ridiculous.
Yeah, like when the Doctor's like worried about his hands, he gets a hammer.
Yeah, and he just smacks it because it's like,
that's how you like
yeah, that's how you loosen
we,
up.
We got a 2-page joke about Ratbat.
Yes.
Yes. Like, oh my
god. Which is great, because, again, I just remember the voices from the cartoon. They gave him, like, a proper, like, over-the-top Transylvanian accent in that.
Yeah.
And it's, I still read it that way.
Yeah, that's exactly how you should read it. I should like, always have that.
I do like that they've got some characters in there that I didn't think would show up very much. Like, some of my favourite characters from the G1 era of cartoons being the Headmasters series that happened post, like, end of season 4 of the original G1 series. That's one of my favourites, but that's
Japanese, like, isn't it?
I don't think Headmasters is Japanese. I think
they had the backdoor pilot in the Western version, and then the actual continuation was Japanese.
No, because it still uses it. Well, yeah, the continuation is Japanese. That came later, but that's like the season 5 stuff. But Headmasters is like a mini series midway through towards the end of season 4, which is kind of where
there's G1 technically ends. Only 3 series. It's just the series 3 is really long.
No, there is a fourth. Well, the DVD's released for 4th season.
Yes, but that's because they're lying. Production wise, it was 3 series.
It's officially split. But in the Headmasters, we get characters like Chrome Dome and Brainstorm.
Brainstorm is amazing.
Rewind, Highbrow. Those characters, I loved their designs back then, and they didn't change them that much for this comic compared to what they've changed from the other characters. So it was kind of cool to see them showing up.
If you like Chrome Dome, Brainstorm, and Rewind, they are all. They get fucking put through the ringer. They are huge characters in this series.
That's what I'm saying. It's fun to read this stuff. Because
man.
Also a big fan.
I can't spoil it, but Chrome Dome and Rewind in particular.
We'll get there. Like, I'm sure there's something to do with the Cybertronian porn that Rewind was buying before he got on the ship.
Snuff films are not pornography.
I know, but that's how I read that scene.
Explaining that to the audience.
And I'm also a big fan of Ultra Magnus as well. So getting Ultra Magnus, Rodimus, and then those guys from the Headmasters, that's kind of cool to see that as like a pseudo-continuation of like the end of G1. I kind of like that idea. That was fun to read through, especially remembering their voices in my head, reading through them.
Yeah.
There's a lot about them for plot reasons.
Yeah.
Then you just kind of accept that over time. So yeah, I think there's plenty over the years I've accepted about Transformers as a race, as a fictional race that doesn't make sense if they were real.
Yeah.
But like, it was from 1984, so you kind of just let it
slide.
Why
do they turn into cars for no reason? Who knows?
That was one of the other things that was quite like strange. There was a bunch of characters who like were turning into vehicles and stuff, and then there were some where it was like
Ratbat's a giant bat.
Yeah, right. But there was also the thing where like there were ones where I don't think I ever saw them transform, and at no point in my head did I actually think about them transforming. But then someone said something about, oh, show me your second form. I'm like, or your alternate
form. Your alt mode, yeah.
And it was like, that's weird. Because Like, normally they're just robots.
That's a major that's a major part of the world building. You'll get into that more in like later volumes of More Than Meets the Eye, but like the idea that it's like a thing in the society that like it matters what you turn into is like, and that you can't change it. Like, you just are whatever you turn into. And like, if you turn into something that's like shitty or not useful, then like people are gonna judge you. Like, that's a whole thing,
which is really like weird, because
like, what if you just turn into like a floppy disk? Like, that sucks, and everybody treats you like you suck.
Let us not forget that in the very first episode of the 1984 American cartoon, while they're still on Cybertron, Soundwave does in fact transform into and then back out of a lamppost,
and it's amazing,
before going to Earth and becoming a tape deck.
Yeah, but that's the thing is again, it's that thing where it's like, oh, what you can and cannot transform into, unless you're specifically in a fight, like fighting each other. Because okay. There's a bit where, who was the guy who I'd forgotten his name, and he was with...
What colour is he?
I don't know, they're all...
Skids, Swerve, Rogue.
Oh, yeah,
Swerve.
Skids
the big one.
Skids the big one. Where he first meets some other people and he's being chased by a giant robot.
And he's got the thing written behind him where like he's forgotten the shit.
And he's like, take the lock off me. Take the lock off me. And then he can use all his firepower. And
the Star Wars Ray Retaining Bolt. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, okay, because they mentioned that it's like the brain and the T-Cog. The T-Cog. And then there's the something else.
The spark.
That's it. Yeah. Mm. And they're all integrated. And I was like, that's a lot of lore for me to just completely forget. But the point was I was going for is some of the ones they transform into things which have like shitting artillery. And it's like, my brain was like, how does that work?
Do you know what Rewind transforms into? A memory stick.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing. For the record, it's not like something that James Robert has overlooked. Like, it is a major plot point.
But in terms of like...
Because they're not designed. Like, they just happen to turn into certain things.
Yeah. But then they mention about some of them being triple changers or...
Oh, yeah, that's a science experiment.
And it's like, none of it makes sense if you think about it.
Every bit of info James has piped up about so far is this continuity.
Oh, yeah, no, it's all IDW specifically.
Yeah. As far as the reasons outside of this continuity for why they transform into what they transform
into... Because they fucking can.
Is marketing. Okay. Yeah. Toys.
Literally, it sells toys.
Yeah. That makes, ironically, that makes more sense to me.
IDW is the continuity that took a look at stuff where in G1 it was just like, because it's fucking cool, shut up, and was like, what if we could turn this into a political drama?
That's probably why I'm not as big a fan of it, because I grew up with the like, fuck it, it's cool. Of course Soundwave's a tape deck. That's awesome.
That's also why I fucking love it, because taking something that's like very stupid and trying to turn it into something that kind of makes sense is my shit.
I mean,
you have learned everything you need to know about me and Briggy's taste in media.
I mean, I would say, considering the first comic I read, where it was sort of like, these are robots, they transform, and they're fighting each other. And
so the G1 approach, yeah.
Yeah, and then coming to this. And this, I when I was describing it to Briggy, felt much more like a modern sensibility of a comic where I'm like, there is a proper like thing that you've got to be aware of here and there.
What you're doing right now is analogous to examining how does Skeletor talk when he's just a skull? And then how is he a skeleton if only his like head is a skeleton and the rest of him is a buff body? Magic.
Except
it's just rule of cool.
But here is the thing. It does it in a way that's kind of like, you know what, this is actually entertaining.
I mean, it can be, yeah.
Yeah, like, IDW is like, they don't shy away from the ridiculousness. They go so full in on the ridiculousness that it comes out the other side.
Yeah, that's one of the, because there was the bit
they are committed.
There was the bit where they had the whole bomb plot thing, where Bumblebee is then, oh, why do you do that? And it's like, oh, and it's like, oh, look, you're trying to do, like, the tragic storyline about...
This is why I said up top that outside of that first issue, I have enjoyed this volume.
Yeah.
I'm just being comedically dismissive.
Oh, no. I mean,
somebody has to be.
Yeah. I think I'm totally going to read the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I think at the moment in my head, it's almost like having to juggle two different Transformers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the one where it's like...
Oh, woe is you. Two different Transformers.
Listen, do you have any idea how many continuities I can juggle?
Yeah.
But no, it is. Like, the very beginning...
None of them is as good as G1.
The beginning of IDW is, first of all, 13 years distinct and a bunch of creative leads distinct. It's totally different people. But second of all, it's like... This is after, like, the second soft reboot of the series. Like, the original... is very much more heavily like inspired by Dreamwave, which is the previous stuff, because they literally inherited scripts.
Yeah.
And then the latter stuff, they gave it... So the guy who wrote More Than Meets the Eye is James Roberts, who is a British writer who is... he got his job basically by writing a novel-length, really, really surreal fucking Transformers fan fiction. And it's called Eugenesis, and it's not canon, but basically they hired him and he made his fan fiction canon. And, like, it's fan fiction. Like, it is buck fucking wild. He is into, like, let me put it this way. If I was given the reins to Transformers comics, I would just be James Roberts. We have, like, similar influences, like postmodern philosophy. So the tone difference between early Transformers and we just hired the guy who wrote the really surreal novel-length fucking Transformers fanfiction, IDW, like, there's a difference.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, is I don't think either of them are better or worse.
They're just very different.
I know.
I think we might have different opinions.
I think we do.
Yeah. Well, if you are not a Transformers like diehard fan of either the new stuff or the old stuff.
In other words, if you're a sensible human being.
Thank you. but if you are coming to this on the basis that A, you know about Transformers in any way, shape or form, and B, you want to read what is essentially like a nice either continuation or a brand new version of the idea of Transformers, this has everything in this particular thing. What I would say is especially the newer one, is the old one, being someone who's not very transform, if you're wanting to do it like I plan probably to do so, is reading the old stuff is very much a case of, you probably don't know that much about Transformers, here's a couple of Transformers that you might know, and also don't have to learn a load of other people.
Yeah.
And as you get to the newer one, it's like, here's a good 2-3 dozen people you need to know about.
Yes.
And I am not good at remembering names.
And also some of them are just the same color. Like, this is the thing. Like, all of the fucking medics are the same red and white color scheme, which doesn't help. Like, I can recognize Ratchet, but trying to tell apart, like, First Aid, Red Alert, fucking Ambulon, I'm just sat here like, listen.
I think that's a problem really with the art style for me on this one, is the silhouettes aren't as distinct as they have been in previous comics. Again, I'll point back to like the Dreamwave Transformers comics, and I think that's some of the best art we've had for those continuations of G1 designs, because the silhouettes are so distinct that you can put nearly 40, 50 characters into a storyline and have them interchanging between distinctly see who is who.
There are good artists who worked on Dreamwave. There are also some very bad artists who worked on Dreamwave.
I'm talking like mainline Dreamwave stories.
It's, for me, a lot of the really good artwork was more like they hired very good people to do the house style in certain instances, but there were a lot of mediocre artists.
I'm going to also argue that, again, having to follow 50 characters, it could be the bloody Mona Lisa for every single one of them. Still not gonna know.
Also, a lot of the characters are literally based on the same mold of toys. Like, this is the thing, like, we were talking about Seekers, so you know, you were saying like there were different jets that all were like the same, yes, but were different colors. It's literally because they take the same toy and then they paint it different colors, and then when they have the characters, they don't change the models in the comic. And so it's like, yeah, you just have to remember that Thundercracker is the blue one, and Skywarp is the purple one, and Starscream is the one that's red, white, and blue.
The point I was making with the older art style is, yeah, like, this is analogous in that way towards, like, the end of Dreamwave stuff, where you were seeing a lot of characters, like, More Than Meets the Eye is that sort of point in its chronology of its comic run. But, like, having a previous knowledge of Transformers, knowing what these characters are meant to look like to a degree, when you compare the two, this art style, and this is not like me dicking on the artist, because I still think it's nice art, but it is definitely hard to follow this comic, even as a Transformers fan, knowing these characters from different continuities at the very least, and what they sort of should look like, to follow who's on page at what point. If you look at the Dreamwave stuff, yeah, it starts out like it starts out like the earlier infiltration story that you've read, where you've got less bots going on, less things, you can follow it. But by the end of that, you do have a lot of characters, and so you do have this. And I just think, looking back, the artist, and I mean, I can't remember who does art for what at this point.
I can't remember.
But on face value, that Dreamwave stuff was a lot easier to follow on page with the action happening as to who was who. Whereas this is a little more sketchy.
I can't remember the exact artist for the early ones. I don't know if it's that Alex Milne did it and then he got better, or if it's that Alex Milne came in like volume 2 or 3. Yeah. It does get better with that. I do think that the first couple of like trade paperback volumes of More Than Meets the Eye, they struggle a lot with things like not being able to distinguish silhouettes, like you said. And yeah, I think with Transformers, the silhouettes are very important. And also in terms of not being able to like, it's very flat coloring. There's not a lot of depth. And then they get better colorists on. I think it might even be, and I might be wrong on this, but it starts off where they don't have a separate colorist. And then later on, they have separate colorists. And I think that helps a lot. You end up with a lot more like depth perception.
But the artist for volume 1 of More Than Meets the Eye, that art would be perfect for a storyline with a lot less characters.
Five people. Yeah,
yeah, most. Whereas for what's actually happening in that volume, and there's a lot of characters on page at the same time. And it was difficult for me to read on a large monitor.
And we're embarrassing nerds.
Yeah, I know these characters from other continuities. I have a big monitor that I was reading these CBZ files on, and even I was having to like scroll back up and be like, wait, who was in this bit?
See, I handled it quite differently in that I just went, oh, it's another one of those robots, and he's doing something. Yeah. And the other thing is it felt very much, this sounds, I may be way off balance here, but the way the whole entire series seems to be set up is it's very The Walking Dead, in which it's like, here's a bunch of characters, get to know about 5 of them because a lot of them are going to die along the way.
So it's kind of a midpoint. I will say that there are characters that will die.
Well,
and they will die fairly quickly.
Yeah, that did seem to be like a, here's some people and they're doing stuff and now they're gone.
It will be more than like 5 people that you get to know who survive.
I feel like the A-list of the B-list are safe.
It's not even that. Like, there are some very minor characters that survive and some fairly major characters that don't. Like, not to spoil it, but it is, don't assume, Briggy, because you know somebody that they're not going
to. Again, we need to lock this discussion down to just volume 1.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. That's what I was...
we can follow on as we go through more volumes in the future.
I just assumed that it was, from the story, like the way it was set up, it was a case of, here's a lot of people, and the way that they treat them in the first volume is, a lot of these people are dying, so you can get attached to the ones who you were getting attached to, and some of that will pay off in that you'll get to know about them, some of that will pay off in at some point they'll die horribly and you'll feel really bad about it, and then at some point some of the ones who you don't feel a better thing about will die, and it's just, that happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's a modern comics thing, where you can throw quite a number of people on it, just so that you can get used to the fact that the consequences of things are things die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's weird for, because we've referenced this to each other in chat about the H-Bomber guys thing, where traditionally Transformers would die, but then they came back because they got fixed.
Because you, unlike Briggy, has watched H-Bomber guys' fucking excellent video about Transformers movie.
On the watch list.
Yeah. About the Transformers movie and how it was a status quo change and why it was so influential.
Yeah, but it's,
yeah, new toys.
Well, yeah.
It goes
the way
a lot,
they handle the new toys.
Don't spoil it for him. He hasn't watched it.
But the point is that whole permanency of these people falling over, but they'll get up later.
IDW people, and they don't do it gratuitously, and they don't do it like overly grim darkly, but like people just fucking die.
There are a couple, which is hilarious.
This is just a comics thing, though. We've had this as far back as the original Marvel comics. They killed off several characters. It's like, yep, that's
Marvel
that's
brought people back when the toys came back, though.
Not as often as you'd expect. Not as often as a cartoon. It was a very different.
No, but when they killed off characters and then 5 years later the toy came back, they would bring people back.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, we're comparing like a 1980s toy comic versus what is now like more of a.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it represents a shift in how the storytelling functions.
The deaths in comics tend to be more permanent than they are in kids' cartoons for the same marketing purposes.
The thing is, though, the Marvel comics were tied to the toy line.
Yeah.
There is no IDW toy line.
No.
Like, it. In order to get an IDW Rodimus figure, I would have to get a, quote-unquote, unlicensed third-party figure, which exists, but is extremely illegal. I have stared at it many times and battled with my conscience, but it's beautiful and I want it. But it's like, because it's completely not tied, like it's tied to the brand, but it is not tied to any specific toy that is on the shelves. So they have to kind of maintain the Transformers brand as an advertisement, but they don't have to have any particular character be alive or dead. Like, they have that little bit more freedom, as opposed to like the cartoon, where it's like, thanks to fucking Reagan and shit, we can just make toy commercials and pretend that they're fiction.
Cool.
So any more questions about the Transformers before we move on?
I did have a question.
Yeah, go on.
So in terms of Transformers, we get a lot of information. What would you say is the three pieces of information that is the weirdest thing about Transformers?
That was the segue I was looking for. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, well, in terms of the three... So last episode, I know that we were like, yes, we are going to do the three weirdest Transformers bits of nonsense, and Paul has to decide between me and Briggy.
How we line this up, Paul? This is your segment that you came up with. Okay. How do you want to run this?
So we're gonna, if you want to, in your minds, order your weakest to your strongest.
Before we do your weakest and all my weakest, I want to drop, because I was going to use this, but I want to drop it in as like an honourable mention, just because, I mean, it's a very short one, but it's always been funny to me ever since I was a kid watching the original cartoon, and that would have been Alpha Trion, because, and we don't need to care about his backstory or the fact that he's like, you know, a demigod and things, there's all sorts of stuff going on. The most important part about Alpha Trion is that he appears in a time travel episode in the original G1, which is where this main crazy idea comes from. Alpha Trion has a Fu Manchu mustache and beard.
He is delightful.
So why a robot needs a beard, I don't know. But he wasn't designed that way, because when we time travel back, he has a goatee.
He added it on.
Which means that his beard grew in italics.
He fucking lengthened it.
Did it transform?
Oh my God.
Excellent, sir. Excellent. Alpha Trion, like, robots with beard. The original robot with a beard. My weakest option is, because I mentioned him on the podcast last week, so the only character I brought that, you know, character, not a concept, is Punch from G1.
Oh, God.
Punch / Counterpunch. Or as he's been known alternatively as Nightbeat. He transforms...
No, we call him Punch / Counterpunch. Yes, it's his full name. We give him respect.
He's also known as Nightbeat.
Nightbeat.
They realised that the punch counterpunch gimmick was stupid.
No, it's because you can't copyright the word punch. I mean, also for a toy.
Yeah.
So some of them got renamed later in life.
Nightbeat sounds quite disturbing.
Yeah. So
I mean,
so Punch and also Counterpunch technically transforms into a car.
Okay.
But he also transforms into another robot, that being Counterpunch.
He's a spy.
Counterpunch is a Decepticon spy.
Oh, he's a double agent.
He is, but there's like a version of his bio. This is why I was so mad when Briggy claimed him. There's a version of his bio where he starts to forget which one is the real one. Like, am I Punch or am I Counterpunch? And the name just makes it so stupid.
Okay.
Not just that, but he also, they're not even to the point where we're looking into the comics or any other continuity for him, but in actual Generation 1, in the very first episode of The Headmasters, he actually acts against his own self-interests as if he has multiple personalities. They never outright say
his
whether
bio
or not Punch
does.
And Counterpunch. And I mean, as a kid, in the cartoon being given to you, he shows up, doesn't have it like any preamble to his episode, because that's what happened in Generation 1. Robots just showed up suddenly because they were toys now. As Punch, gets into the vault in Autobot City as Counterpunch to steal some stuff that shouldn't be stolen, because he's, you know, not meant to be a Decepticon, he's meant to be a spy. Gives it over to the Decepticons, transforms back into Punch to try and stop them from stealing it, even though he's helped them, and then gets beat the shit out of him and left, and then told, like, they took the key to Vector Sigma. It's like, if you just not got involved, Punch, everything would have been okay.
Fucking Punch.
So he's Gollum.
Also, his name is his name is just Punch and Counterpunch.
Yeah.
He was like, what will be? And also, there's versions of G1 continuity where, like, the Decepticons know that they have a guy called Counterpunch. And there's a guy called Punch, and Counterpunch will be like, let me go and fight my Autobot equivalent, and then he'll go around the corner, transform into Punch, come back and kick the shit out of them.
Okay, so Briggy's just shown me what I can assume is an image of
Punch and Counterpunch.
Yes, let's see. Which...
One has one gun, and the other has two guns. So that's how you can tell that they're different people.
Okay. You can also tell that it's just kind of the robot in reverse.
Yes.
Orange on the front for Punch, and then orange on the back for Counterpunch. So, simple toy, simple concept.
So, my weakest offering, but I do want to just show it to Paul, is the original Ratchet G1 toy. So, for context, the original Transformers toys...
And Ironhide.
Yes, also Ironhide. Shut up, I'm doing Ratchet because I know Ratchet better. So the original G1 Transformers toys were not made by Hasbro purposely. They were imported from various popular toy lines in Japan that were just part of the genre of transforming mecha, which didn't exist in the West, but was well established in Japan. So we've
mentioned this on the podcast before, but another plug, now you brought it up, you can see all about the history of Diaclone becoming Transformers in The Toys That Made Us on Netflix.
Yeah, they talk about it. Season 2.
Really good story. Really good backstory for why they got made.
So Ratchet comes from the Diaclone series, but unlike a lot of the ones that were imported, he isn't like a humanoid mecha in that. Like, you've seen what Ratchet looks like. He's just like a dude who's a robot.
Yeah.
And anybody who has seen the Transformers cartoon or seen any of the later G1 toys or any later Ratchet toys, like, he's just like a dude. So a lot of the ones that they imported were kind of just like, you know, they were vehicles. Like, even in robot mode, they were vehicles. The Ratchet and Ironhide ones, which Ironhide is just a red recolor of Ratchet.
Without the ambulance lights, yeah.
Yeah. They are very not humanoid. They have no humanoid features. But they do have a seat that somebody can sit in, including, like, the seat in ambulance mode is visible in robot mode at the top. So they took a sticker that had a face drawn on it, and they put it on the seat.
That's a little bit...
And this is what it looks like. You can't see the seat face, but I'm... listen... Oh,
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a Transformer.
Yeah, that doesn't look like any of the rest of
it. But, like, you look at that, you see that square at the back?
Yeah.
So on there, they just had, like, a flat sticker that just had, like, a face on it, and they just stuck it on there.
I mean, I have been collecting Generation 1 toys for a very long time, and so I'm going to need someone, a third party that isn't me and James, to contact us and confirm whether or not the sticker face actually exists. Because I have zero...
It does.
I am 99% sure it doesn't exist. I have zero knowledge of the sticker face ever being a thing.
It does, but they all peel off. The only ones I've ever seen that still have it on are the really rare boxed ones. They're very bad stickers.
Yeah.
I much prefer the original version that I knew of, which didn't have the sticker face and was just no head. The brain was just somewhere in the chest. That was it. You talk to a windscreen.
Seeing the actual toy for that,
yeah,
it does feel like it feels a little bit After 40 sort of cobbled together sort of thing.
It does work as a piloted robot, though. You could see that with the little
it's
man.
It's just very clearly not a person.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's, when they say it's a robot in disguise, what they mean is it's a van who transforms into... a thing, but not really a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to the story of Transformers. It wasn't just Diaclone. There's like 6 different toy lines from Japan that became Transformers. Oh, yeah. But some of them make more sense than others.
I'm just trying to justify in my head sort of like, that's weird because of like how they taken it from the history.
Yeah.
Whereas Punch Counter Punch is just stupid.
It's just really stupid. Somebody sat down and wrote that bio and was just like, yes, this is canon.
So I'm going with the stupid.
That's fair. I was mad when Briggy claimed Punch and Counterpunch.
Because
he's so stupid.
It's a pretty stupid concept, and especially because if your robot transforms into another robot, that it's robots who are robots in disguise.
Yeah.
Which is just weird. And it's the two cars.
Oh, you really? Yeah, yeah. It's two different cars. There's an orange car and a blue car.
Yeah.
So you can transform into 4 things total.
That's crazy.
He's a robot in disguise. In disguise.
Yeah. That's weird.
Wait till you find out about the Pretenders.
Okay.
Yes. Yay. Count and punch and punch. It's so fucking stupid. Right, so are we doing my next one?
Yeah.
You go for
okay,
it.
So I'm not super familiar with this one. I will admit, this comes from friend of show, Andrew Beecham, or Mex, who regularly argues out loud to the podcast while listening to it because he can't be on it.
Sorry.
I know, usually with me, correcting me, especially on Transformers things, and you, apparently.
Okay, well, I will fight him in the parking lot of Applebee's.
I feel like Mex might win.
Probably, but, yeah.
He did send me this one because I only learned about this today, and it's just ridiculous as a concept. It's a concept in the Generation 2 Transformers comic.
Oh, God.
Known as Budding.
I know where this one's going.
Which I'm just going to read a short snippet of the wiki article of Budding to let you comprehend this. I'll do my best reading voice for this article. Budding. The Transformers Generation 2 comic introduced the concept of asexual budding. Bubbles and lesions of apparently liquid metal form on the robot's chest, accompanied by energy discharge. The process grows more intense until a large mass of liquid metal bursts free from the chest and slowly forms into the proto-form, like blank figure, and then solidifies into the full Transformer. Illustrations suggest that this is something of a communal event, with others surrounding the budding robot in a circle.
It's weird fetishy empreg.
Is this not that episode of Futurama where...
I just want to be very clear. Yeah. Whoever fucking came up with this, it's a sex thing.
I have a visual for you.
Like, it's a weird sex thing.
This is budding.
Okay.
Like, it's a sex thing, right?
Well, it's not that it's a sex thing so much. Is that doesn't seem like that how Transformers would work.
Somebody has some... And listen, I respect this person immensely because they just fucking went out there. Somebody has a really weird fucking fetish, okay? Budding is weird.
That's definitely weird. I'm not sure how stupid
I sort of see it as similar to the closest Transformers might ever get to a chestburster. Mm. Only the host survives.
It's just so...
Instead of dying.
The art that Briggy is showing us is so lovingly detailed.
Yeah, it's Gen 2.
Yeah, somebody was really
Gen
into
2 comics,
that.
Gen 2 comics, cool.
Somebody was really into that, and it unsettles me. But again, nothing but respect.
Primal's awesome in the background of that.
There is sure a scene in James Roberts' fanfiction that includes that. So my second... option is Devil Z or Devil Z, which is from the Japanese continuation of the original G1 cartoon. Because when it stopped over here, like in Japan, they were like, we're just going to keep going. We're going to make Japanese continuations. So
it's unofficially known as Transformers Takara if people wanted to go find that. Transformers Takara is the Japanese continuation of G1.
This is from Super God Master Force. Yeah.
Yeah, which is...
Yeah.
Yes.
So in Super God Master Force, the continuation, is Megatron in charge of the Decepticons? No. Is Galvatron in charge of the Decepticons? No. Devil Zed is in charge of the Decepticons. He is a pulsating globe of iridescent energy. He just kind of fucking shows up. One of his titles is the Führer of Darkness.
Wow.
He's not a robot. He's just kind of there. It's just, he's basically like, we wanted to come up with a super anime eldritch villain, but also make it Transformers. So rather than be like a robot who like leads an army of robots against other robots, he looks like this.
Oh.
He's an eldritch horror from beyond. Not a lot is ever explained about him.
He's very animu.
He just kind of shows the fuck up. He does this at some point. Let me get the picture open. This is him on his throne.
Okay.
And all of this is just put into like normal Transformers G1 continuity with no explanation.
Although this is the same era that gave us Star Saber, which...
Oh, fucking Star Saber.
Yeah.
But he's just kind of like... He just kind of shows up. Like, imagine if you're used to it being like Megatron is in charge of the Decepticons. And then maybe like his upgraded form, Galvatron, is in charge of the Decepticons. And then it's like... Well, he is a glowing eldritch abomination from the void beyond who is in charge of the Decepticons.
That whole era gets very Mazinga-Z very quickly. Yeah. Lots of, like, hot-blooded proto-Evangelion stuff in that era of just a melting pot of odd for Japan.
And nobody was kind of giving it any critical attention, so they could just do whatever the fuck they wanted.
So the choices we have here are... Robots reproduce by having blobs of them pour out.
Yeah.
Versus the leader of the Decepticons is now a big ball.
An eldritch abomination.
Who is a ball. As much as the creepy weird reproduction thing is creepy weird, that's nowhere near as stupid as...
It's very stupid.
To be honest, the two that I had after Punch and Counterpunch, I did wonder in what order to put them, depending on what James did. Yeah, sure, don't do the other way around.
Devil Zed, what the fuck?
The whole idea is just you have a robots fighting robots, and then you're like, but what if one of them just wasn't a robot?
Yeah.
What if one of them was a big
literally.
Ball?
Literally.
Because balls.
If you want stupid, because my balls. Next one is incredibly stupid. It will require some explanation.
Okay.
But...
Oh, no, I think I got this one in the bag with
this one. Do you want to go second? Do you want to win a stays on? Do you want to let James?
Yeah, James goes first.
Okay. So
just to reiterate, it's one apiece. This is the decider.
Tiebreak round.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much you know about the character of Galvatron, Paul. So in the Transformers the movie, the 1984, is it 84?
Yeah.
86
movie.
Oh. 86, yeah. That's it. I knew it
2 years
was
after it, at the TV show.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. 1986 movie. Megatron, like, dies, and then, like, the basically equivalent of the devil, Unicron, like, turns his corpse into Galvatron, which is, like, Megatron, but stronger and purple.
Turns him into Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah. So basically, it's just like, oh, Megatron's dead. oh, but like the big bad has made him more powerful than ever. So Galvatron is like the big bad in series three, like the continuation after the movie. Like he's more powerful than Megatron. He's just, they wanted a new toy.
Not to be confused with More Than Meets the Eye that you've just read that mentions Megatron and Galvatron as two separate
They're different.
People.
Ignore that.
Yeah.
In the cartoon, it's literally just like he gets upgraded because they wanted a new toy. So in the Japanese like continuation, there's a bit where Galvatron comes up with the idea of upgrading himself with Unicron's power again. So Unicron in the movie, if you haven't seen it, for anybody at home, or if, I don't know if you remember it.
Yeah, Orson Welles in his last ever movie.
He is Orson Welles. He is like the size of a planet and transforms into very clearly like the devil, and like he eats planets. He's just the fucking devil. He has horns and everything. So Galvatron in the Japanese continuity is like, I'm going to upgrade myself again. I've got a plan. I'm going to make myself like Unicron. I'm going to be Grand Galvatron. So he comes up with like a design that is like Unicron in his transformed form, which is the size of a planet. Would you like to see?
Yeah. For a second there, I was really worried when you said to be like Unicron. And then you were just going to show me he just got fat. But no, it's fine. Okay, so. No. Oh my God, he just did this part. Okay, so.
So his plan is to become as big as a planet and round, but without being transformed. So his head's just sticking out and he's got like little arms.
Okay, so for people who may not have seen this.
Please just look on Transformers Wiki.
If you've ever seen Homestar Runner.
It's Bum Bum.
It's Bum Bum.
So he basically was like, I will be as powerful as Galvatron, not as Galvatron, as Unicron. And Unicron transforms into a round planet. So he's just a ball with his head sticking out and like little arms.
Yeah, it Fergie.
And it's called Grand Galvatron. And he's just like, this is my most powerful form.
Understandably, yeah. Briggy.
It's going to be a difficult one.
It really is.
I still have faith in this tiny article. There's not much to it. But I think while that might be one of the silliest things you've seen, I think this might be the most ridiculous fucking concept ever dreamt up in any continuity of any fan, of any fiction ever written, really. I think it takes that much of the cake. What I have for you is a tiny article on TF Wiki known as A Technogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
I know this one. I've read a lot of TF Wiki.
And I'm just going to read out exactly as the wiki says, because I can't even embellish any more than this already does.
Oh, God.
A technogenesis is the secular scientific explanation that life on Cybertron sprang up through the naturally occurring interaction of gears, levers, and pulleys.
So, I want to give some context to show how funny this is.
We've got a second
is.
Paragraph here. The strict scientific rationalism of A Technogenesis rejects traditional religious claims that Primus is the source of all life on Cybertron and much of the ancient doctrine surrounding the Matrix. So it's a secular thought that goes against their own mythology, which they've already proven in the comics to be true.
So basically, for context for people who are not fucking Transformers nerds, the obvious question of how do you get a fucking planet of robots if nobody built them is something that a lot of different continuities have answered in a lot of different ways, but the comics, including both Marvel and IDW and Dreamwave, have traditionally said that there's like a fucking robo god called Primus, and Unicron is like robo devil, and like they were created by robo god Primus. Yeah. But of course they have atheists.
Yeah,
so they have to come up with a reason that there's fucking robots, and that's the fucking reason.
So Primus is the guy that covered Black Betty.
Yeah.
It also says, in the 2005 IDW continuity, believers in A Technogenesis are referred to as evolutionary engineerists.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions about
I have
this.
Many questions. None of them will be answered.
I feel like this gets bonus points for including Primus.
Get to the end of Lost Light and you'll learn a lot about Primus.
So Primus is God. He's also Cybertron, sometimes. Not all the time. Depends who's writing. Sometimes the planet itself is God.
Their IDW has an interesting perspective on Primus, and you need to read to
and
the end of Lost Light.
Sometimes when Primus isn't the planet, it's just pulleys and levers and gears.
That spontaneously create robots.
And suddenly...
And Centico Metallico, or whatever the fuck it's called.
Do you think that's the bit that I get confused about? Is it like there's a box just...
I think
them?
If you just leave...
There's a metal that just spontaneously creates consciousness that is called something ridiculous like Centico Metallico.
I think what actually happens is if you take a box and it's just got a couple of gears in there and a pulley and like you just throw a lever in and just sort of shake it around a bit, leave it to ferment for a couple of weeks.
Oh my God.
Or maybe a couple of million years. And they'll begin interacting with each other enough to the point where they become a giant robot.
So you're suggesting that my garage, if I leave it long enough...
I mean, you've left your garage for quite a while. Have you checked there isn't currently a Transformer living in there?
Oh my God.
I haven't, but now I'm scared.
I mean, it's been a couple of weeks. It might not be a full Transformer. It might just be a Minicon.
Okay.
So, you know, it's... I mean, it depends what kind of Minicon it is. It might help you clean up the rest of the garage, or you might have several Minicons. It's that's all entirely based on the idea of whether or not a Technogenesis is true or not, or if it is, in fact, our Lord and Saviour Primus.
Paul, though...
Have you accepted our Lord and Saviour Primus Christ into your life?
I think you mean Optimus Christ. But, he dies and comes back. I'm
Primus gave his one begotten son to the world of Cybertron to die for your sins, Paul.
I'm getting confused with this analogy. Who's the Holy Ghost in this?
Starscream.
Yeah, because he comes back as a ghost.
Okay,
but on the other hand, Paul, I would like to put my argument to you, which is that it's very fat.
I know. Okay. I'm really torn here because
on the one hand, very good.
On the one hand, Friggy, you are right. This is stupid, like on a whole other level.
This started back in like the original Marvel Comics. This is a stupid idea from back then. What's funnier is that they kept the idea into the IDW community, that they actually named the people that believe this an actual term.
Okay, yes, but on the other hand, he's Ultra Galvatron is very fat.
Ultra Galvatron is very fat.
He is very fat.
He's a very ball.
And
he's a collection of gears and leaves.
But how did they come to be? Oh, the questions. I'm gonna have to just wimp out here and call this a draw.
Both won.
Yeah, you both have found the things that make me maybe think that maybe reading the Transformers comics is a great idea.
I think as well, just to back up my point a little bit in case it's supposed to over the edge. Remember that they do talk about Tailgate being 6 million years old, does in fact have pulleys, gears and levers for his transformation cog.
Yes.
Thus maybe lending credence to a Technogenesis.
On the other hand, he's real fucking round. Yeah. Every time I show the picture to Paul, he's going to die.
Really hard, it's a funny picture.
Yeah.
And this was like in a professionally animated cartoon.
Yes.
Like anybody at home who is just listening to us lose our fucking minds, just Google Grand Galvatron.
I'm sure when this goes out, someone...
This can be our cover. We will replace the cover image with Grand Galvatron.
Or we might just tweet. But it is... weird and funny and great and Transformers. And again, we're very sorry if you are only just listening to this now and haven't decided to purchase this. But if it comes up again, because sometimes they do repeat bundles.
Yeah.
Or even if you just have the money to buy some stuff and you just fancy reading some stuff, maybe go throw some money at one of the many distributors of Transformers stuff, because it's weird and it's stupid, but it's also entertaining.
It's like, I can't even... Transformers is unlike any other fandom that I'm a part of, in that so much of it is just nonsense, but it's so delightful. And I mean, we were going to talk, to put it into perspective, we were going to talk about something else this episode, which we will talk about next episode, don't worry. But we talked about Transformers for so long that we ran out of time. Like, literally, we were that interested in talking about Transformers.
I had a bonus that I wanted to share, Paul. Since we've been, I'll say it out loud so people that know Transformers know what I'm talking about, and you can also go Google it. But I'm just trying to find a good picture to show you of Skylynx.
Oh God, Skylynx! Try Skybite as well. Skybite is ridiculous.
So Skylynx is a plane.
Yes.
Like think, what is he, like Boeing 747-ish or
yeah, he's got like a big passenger plane.
But he doesn't transform into a humanoid robot.
No.
This is Skylynx's alt mode.
What's that? It's
what like picture a are you showing him?
Dinosaur? Is it the dragon?
I would guess it's a giant lynx.
What picture are you showing him? Oh yeah, that's not a great one. Look up Skybite. Skybite is like a giant hovering shark that's also a plane.
Okay, next time when you're coming for this particular thing, these are the ones you should have gone with, because they're quite straightforward.
Shut the fuck up. Grand Galvatron was the winner.
Yeah, Grand Galvatron is amazing. Just because it is very stupid.
Also, Ratchet has a sticker instead of a face.
Yeah, that's just plain.
Also, like the fucking weird. Fucking Devil Zed.
Yeah, the Devil's Head is just
basically what you're saying is that I won.
I'm agreeing that some of those are stupid, but not as stupid necessarily as some of the things that Briggy did.
I mean, Skybite is pretty stupid.
I mean, that's why he looks like in the G1 cartoon.
Yeah, either one of you could have just chosen that one. Yep. That was more stupid than
I'll be honest, a part of the reason that I didn't choose that is that he's just like a regular fucking character in the comics. And so for me, it's just like, I'm used to him. He's not like a weird.
Does he have conversations with people?
Yes, like there are characters where it's just like
you all wasted your opportunities.
There is
seriously the new
let me see.
Skylinks.
The thing about that though is like he just shows up as like a normal fucking character in the comic, so you get used to him.
I'm not getting used to him. Okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you both lost now. Skylinks is the winner.
You know what? I say that we just start like a spin-off podcast that's just me attempting to come up with the stupidest fucking Transformers bullshit.
Skylinks wins.
Oh.
Briggy wins. That was the tiebreaker. I have nothing to break that.
That was.
It's interesting because I spent so many years knowing this and it's been in my mind that it's just normalized. I hadn't even thought about going down to this level for you, Paul.
Skybite is a fucking. Like, in the IDW comics, he turns into like a shark that can float. And he performs poetry as like a hobby. And he. I'm just.
What were you people thinking? What were you reading? These are the winners.
It's become normal.
Because he's a character who just shows up and it's just like a normal fucking character.
You are aware of Grimlock, right?
Like, by contrast.
The T-Rex Dinobot.
Like, Grand Galvatron, like, he shows up in like one Japanese series briefly that I barely watched. Whereas by contrast, Skybite is just kind of there.
Well, in which case, what you've done there is you've normalised a really weird and stupid thing. So well done.
If you want to go back to the Generation 1 cartoons and watch what might be the best, worst episode of all time.
Is it the one in Camelot?
No.
Is it the one with the purple griffin?
No. No, you're getting further away. I think I can highly recommend anyone that's got 20 minutes to waste to laugh at possibly the worst cartoon episode ever made in the Transformers canon would be The Girl Who Loved Powerglide.
Oh, fuck, yes, it is. No, you're right.
Human girl falls in love with a robot.
And, like,
and they play it earnestly.
And also, like, Powerglide doesn't fucking notice.
Okay. What are you doing?
When we say...
When you were like, oh, I'm going to choose the stupidest stuff, you didn't choose that.
When we say girl, we mean, like, she's, like, 15, right? Like, and she's the CEO of a tech company at 15.
Oh, I've got these concepts that are pretty out there. A 15-year-old CEO who falls
in
love...
Did you hear about the mention I just made of fucking Camelot? Yeah. There's an episode where Starscream goes back in time and tries to take over Camelot.
I had The Girl Who Loved Powerglide on VHS as one of the few VHS of Transformers that I had. And I think after, 20 years, I've just kind of internalized it and normalized it.
Maybe we should recommend against Transformers.
On the other hand.
Maybe it's safe for people not to.
On the other hand, Grand Galvatron.
Grand Galvatron is weird. It's not a 15-year-old girl who loves a robot who also happens to be a CEO of a tech company.
You say that. When I was 15, I absolutely would have fucked a Transformer.
Were you a CEO? Doesn't count.
That's fair. Okay, so I wasn't economically advantaged.
I wasn't in the position but economically where I could.
If you're going to be classist about robot fucking.
So Transformers. It appears that they are more than meets the eye.
We broke Paul.
It did. Broken. I'm a broken, confused man, and I've got a lot of comics to read, and hopefully they're nowhere near as weird as any of that.
Just you wait for the end of More Than Meets the Eye.
Yeah, no, it's probably going to get worse.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's all we have time for on this episode. Thanks for joining us all, folks. We want to try and make a shorter episode, and I know we mentioned last week that we were going to be talking about Genlock, but we'll save that for a much longer discussion that we feel it deserves. So look out in the future that's not this episode for a meaty segment talking about all the ins and outs of the 8 episodes that we have of Genlock.
I'm going to make like actual notes. Like, I have a lot of things to say, and I think that it would benefit a lot from me sort of having the chance to really ruminate on them.
So whilst this wasn't multiple varieties of giant fighting robot, we did at least cover a significant portion of Transformers going from the best to the weird. And I'm sure those of you that are Googling it are having some horrible nightmares now about both Grand Galvatron and The Girl Who Loved Powerglide.
And the budding.
Maybe we can imagine The Girl Who Loved Grand Galvatron.
Oh, it's me. That is me. I will volunteer. Imagine the bit in The Hunger Games where she's like, I volunteer.
Okay.
There you go.
I like them thick.
So we have successfully completed episode 7. That's an episode right there, folks. I have been joined, as always, on the Geeks Codex by the world's greatest editor who puts up with our shit on a regular basis, Paul Stevens.
I am broken. I am scarred. Thank you.
Don't worry, folks. He'll be recharged for next episode. And joined, as always, by the ever effervescent and constantly drinking wine, James Cook.
I mean, I had a great time. I don't know what Paul's talking about.
And I have been your host, as always, and I'll be back with you next episode to talk about more ridiculous geek-related things and possibly even more giant robots. I've been Matthew Briggs, and I'll see you next episode. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Seriously.
Oh, I'm so happy that we got to watch you break.